welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Going to talk about poverty, yes, as we've been talking about since the Republican chair of the policy committee, Mr. Reid, came out and said, you know what, we care about poverty now. We, the Republicans, we care about poverty. We're going to go out and we're going to go across the state and we're going to finally, after all of these years, we want to see what poverty looks like. Look, I know they're late to the game. I know that, you know, for years they could give a rat's behind about poverty, about the poor, paid nothing but lip service. But I, for one, am hopeful. I, for one, am looking towards the future that maybe Republicans will be the party that quashes and eliminates and eradicates poverty. Maybe they will. Maybe they've got the ideas, the plan. Maybe. Or maybe not. Or maybe we're going to see all of the same you-know-what that we've been seeing for the last several years. Let the minimum wage be eroded away by inflation, and of course destroy the unemployment as they've done here in the state of Pennsylvania. Steal health care from low-wage workers. Kick kids off of health care. Do away with the general assistance budget that was the only lifeline for the most vulnerable of the most vulnerable in our state. And then turn the hand and point the finger and blame. That's what we've seen from them. And I got to be honest, there's really not much to think that anything is going to change. But as I've said, I, for one, am willing to wipe the slate clean. And I want to see what they're doing. I want to see that they're reaching across the aisle and asking Democrats to help them too. Because it's all hands on deck. If we're going to do away with poverty, if we're going to help those who need help, it's all of us. Because when the people on the bottom do well, when the folks in poverty are doing better, we all do better. So that's why I got to be honest, I'm all in favor. Now we'll talk about that. Also going to talk about the voting. As you're seeing across the country, there are a number of states that are attempting, like Pennsylvania has done, to restrict access to the ballot box, to go back and change the rules, if you will. You know, here another day of the trial here in Pennsylvania on the Voter Suppression Act. Understand what this is about here. It's solely about people who are already registered. We already know who they are. We have sent them voter registration cards. They've voted. These are people who they already jumped through the hoops. And now we're saying, sorry, that wasn't good enough. You have to jump even further in order to exercise your constitutional right to the franchise. Amazing stuff. Also going to talk about Montgomery County, Register of Wills. He's going to be here tonight talking about why he's issuing same-sex marriage license here in the state of Pennsylvania. I got to be honest, good for him. Take somebody with stones. And also going to talk a little bit about the Postal Service, the bill put forth by Daryl Issa and the Republicans who are hell-bent on destroying our post office. Well, it sailed through their committee on a party-line vote. Also going to take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So this weekend, starting tomorrow, the big shindig, the big powwow, the meeting of the minds. They're coming from all across the Commonwealth, even bringing some folks from outside the Commonwealth, about 200 of Governor Corbett's inner circle, the brain trust. Or the pocketbooks, the checkbooks, the people with the money, the very well-to-do. They're coming together. They're going to meet at the Omni Bedford Springs Resort. Sounds kind of swanky, doesn't it? I looked it up and I said, hey, I'd like to go to that. I would like to go see what the governor, what our governor's doing. I would like to see who, you know, what the average price of a room is. $400 at the bottom. Cheap room, $400. Top, $670. I wonder what our governor is saying. We should find out about that. But $670 for a hotel room, I got to be honest. We're not talking about New York City. We're not talking about Washington, D.C. We're not talking about Philly or L.A. We're talking about Bedford, Pennsylvania. Sorry, I don't know that there's any room in $670, really? And the thing that gets me is I don't know, you know, many people. I know I can't afford $670. Can you? To go rub elbows with the gov? But 200 of the inner circle will be there, going to huddle, going to have a little huddle at the Omni Bedford Springs Resort. They're going to bring in Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, and front runner for 2016 for the Republican presidential nomination. He's going to be their keynote speaker tomorrow night, and I'm kind of interested to see what comes out of that, what advice Christie gives. Maybe stop being such an idiot. That would be a start. Saturday morning, going to be the breakout sessions. Going to have, you know, really, really important sessions like job creation and health care. And I'm sure there are going to be tons of sessions on poverty. And I'm sure a bunch of sessions on how to undo the damage that their bad policies have inflicted on residents of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I'm sure there are going to be tons of that. And, of course, how to overturn Obamacare and Obamagration. I just heard that today. The new immigration slang is going to be Obamagration. I kind of love that. But for me, I look at this, and to be honest, this is the make-or-break weekend for Corbett. Understand that. This is where the moneyed people, the people who own this guy, the people who control our Commonwealth, who control our government, the people who write the big checks, this is where they go. He's viable or he's not. We're going to put money behind him or we're not. Because, look, his polling numbers are abysmal. I saw one poll, 24% approval rating. I'm pretty sure, you know, he's getting down into Congress range. And there's not even the ability to say, well, you know, the governor stinks, but my guy's okay because he's our governor. And you look at his legislative agenda. And I know the Democrats are running their broken promises tour. I'm kind of glad they were all broken and battered because they were all bad. We're going to privatize the lottery, really? The best-run lottery in the country and probably in the world? And we're going to hand it over to somebody who's going to admittedly run it at double the expense? Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then you go down the list, the privatization of the liquor stores. Well, that didn't happen. And good, because I don't want it to. You know, right down the list, no transportation bill, none of that. Nothing has happened under this governor. And the jobs numbers, because he was supposed to be, and he's telling us he's the more jobs governor, said he created, you know, 116,000 jobs at one point, he said. But when you look at how many he destroyed, it makes him not so much, the only more jobs that is, more than Wyoming, maybe. But I look at this and you go, okay, the moneyed interests who, you know, these deep-pocketed people who now have intimate access and intimate control of our political process. You know, imagine 200 people who are going to be in this room, who are going to have direct access to saying, you know what, if we support you, this is what you have to do. And I got to be honest, I don't have $400 to $670 to put out on a night or for a room. And I'm sure it was a two-night minimum. Probably three. I mean, do you have that? I mean, that price is way out of my league. Probably out of yours, too. And, you know, I look at this and I wonder if one of the breakout sessions is going to talk about investment and how much austerity has killed us as a Commonwealth and as a nation in particular. I mean, there's a lot of things we should be doing. We should be investing in roads and bridges. We're not. We should be investing in education. Not really. And I know there are things that are going to come out of this powwow that are going to be more of the same. More of the same tired, failed rhetorics. More of the same bad policy. Only it's going to be louder. And they're going to try and spin his failure into, look what we did, and we held those Democrats off. Understand, the Democrats have no power in this state. The state has been so badly gerrymandered that I'm not sure that Democrats are really going to be able to have any substantial control for, well, until 2020 when a redistricting may happen, if we can get it out of the hands of the people who gerrymandered it. The only way this changes is if you and I say enough is enough already, because you cannot look at what's going on in this Commonwealth and go, things are peachy and rosy and keen. You can't look at this and go, hey, the guy's doing a good job. We should reelect him. I don't know anybody who's happy with him. But I do know one thing. I know a lot of my team sport friend Republicans are going to go in there and they're going to yank that lever because, hey, he's on my team. And that's all that matters. My team won. Granted, you lost your job. Granted, the roads are crumbling. Granted, your schools are in trouble. Your property taxes are going through the roof because of this guy's handouts to big corporations and all of the bad policies that have come out because of it. I'm of the mindset, things are going bad, throw the bums out. Well, we got a lot of bums here and a lot that need to go. But is it going to happen? I mean, we severely need investment. Pennsylvania is strategically located, and the governor himself said it. We're within a day's drive of about 60% of the population of this nation. This should be manufacturing hub central. This should be distribution central. But the problem is, you know, I drove a truck for years. Pennsylvania has always been rated as one of the states with the worst roads. Small infrastructure. We need mass investment. And you know what mass investment would do? And this is what kind of just makes me scratch my head and go, you know, the governor's just not getting it. If you invest, one, you put people to work. We're going to miss another construction season. There are going to be thousands of workers who are not working because we've failed again to pass a transportation bill. So we miss another construction season, which means a couple of things. It means, one, you're going to have the higher unemployment. Well, I guess they fixed that because they've screwed those construction workers with the new with that unemployment nonsense bill that they rammed through. All the changes they made, the quote-unquote reforms. You know what the reforms were? The reforms were to exclude as many people as possible from collecting unemployment insurance. That's what the reform was. Let's see if we can screw those people. To Republicans, that's reform. And the other part of this, to me, that isn't ever talked about is the brain drain. You got people who, you know, they've been unemployed now for a couple of years. Sorry, you can't sit by idly and wait for the work to pick up. You go and you do something else, which means you see a dwindling number of people in the craft. So if we do ramp up, you're not going to have the people to do it. And it's all because it all comes back to the one guy. All comes back to Punxsutawney Tom, who the only time we see him is when there's some fundraising to be done or when there's a bad piece of legislation to be signed. And even that, we don't see him all the time. I'm hoping... I really am. I'm hoping that this weekend, I'm hoping that the brain trust, I hope they think that he can win and they put money into him and that he stays and he runs on his abysmal record and the voters of this Commonwealth get their heads out of their keisters and go, you know what? I don't care what team you're on. You did a bad job. You go. That's my view. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with our good friend Eddie Day Pashinsky, Pennsylvania State Representative, about the poverty initiative. Eddie Day's on the policy committee. I'm curious to find out, you know, exactly where they're going next. Quick break, right back. Stick around.
Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the world.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The ugly, grim reality of free trade export factories' brutal exploitation of workers is prompting the Teamsters and other groups to call for the U.S. to suspend TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa.
Vietnam should not be rewarded for its bad behavior, and especially should not be allowed to participate in the TPP. That's why the Teamsters are joining with the Citizens Trade Campaign, the Communication Workers of America, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Unite Here, the Carpenters Union, United Students Against Sweatshops, to call for the suspension of trade discussions until Vietnam ends the abuses and lets people join unions and stop the discrimination.
President Obama is meeting with Vietnamese President Trong Tan Sang today amid ongoing Trans-Pacific Partnership Partnership Trade Talks, Scott Nova, Executive Director of the Worker Rights Consortium, says the abuses in Vietnamese export factories serving brands like Nike, Converse, and others include forced labor, child labor, physical beatings, and gender discrimination. Workers can't join unions other than the Communist Party-dominated VGCL.
In 2011, even a representative of the country's official labor union called wages in Vietnam's export factories, quote, shockingly low, unquote. Today, the unfortunate truth remains that made in Vietnam is largely synonymous with sweatshop labor. In our experience at the Worker Rights Consortium, to the extent that the response of global corporations and trading partners to those countries is to reward those countries by putting more business into the country, the countries get exactly the message you would expect them to get, which is that they should keep doing what they're doing.
Polling suggests that supporting an increase in the federal minimum wage seems like a no-brainer bipartisan issue. Jesse Russell reports.
A majority of Americans support increasing the federal minimum wage. According to a new survey by Hart Research, a whopping 80% of respondents say they support bumping the minimum wage all the way up to $10.10 per hour. The support cuts across party lines, income earning levels, and regions. Those with incomes over $100,000 support the increase by 79%, while low-income adults support an increase by 83%. Republicans are least passionate about raising the minimum wage, but only 38% disapprove with an increase. Raising the minimum wage has been one of the central components of President Barack Obama's newest economic plan. He discussed it during a speech yesterday.
And the best defense against all of these forces, global competition, economic polarization, is the strength of the community. So we need a new push to rebuild rundown neighborhoods. We need new partnerships with some of the hardest hit towns in America to get them back on their feet. And because no one who works full time in America should have to live in poverty, I am going to keep making the case that we need to raise the minimum wage because it's lower right now than it was when Ronald Reagan took office. It's time for the minimum wage to go up.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Work it hard to make a left. Rich and far the short, left the cameo. Blue devil, head is fake.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So for the last week and a half now, we've been asking the question, where is Dave Reed now? Yesterday, I was marching in Harrisburg with Judge Evans with the wellness walk, anti-violence walk here in Harrisburg. I didn't see a Republican there because, to me, violence, poverty issue. So if Chairman Reed is looking for poverty, because remember, empowering opportunities, gateways out of poverty, the committee chair said he was going to go on a Commonwealth-wide poverty tour. He wants to find out what poverty looks like. I didn't see him. In fact, I haven't seen him in many places or anywhere, actually. Maybe this weekend when the governor has his powwow, maybe they'll look for poverty at the posh country club, $670 a night. Maybe they'll find it there. Just a thought. Anyway, I've got Pennsylvania State Representative Eddie DePaschinski on the line. He is on the policy committee. Eddie, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, pleasure to be with you again.
So the chairman, the Republican chairman of the policy committee, Dave Reed, I don't know if you saw it, and I hope, have you seen this new initiative, the Empowering Opportunities, Gateways Out of Poverty?
I just got the clip that Dave was going to go into neighborhoods where poverty existed because evidently he hasn't seen it. I'm not quite sure where Dave has been hanging out, but I mean, all you have to do is watch the news to see it. All you have to do is watch and see the kind of problems that your cities are having and many, many in some of your rural areas as well, because the state hasn't provided the kinds of dollars necessary for their schools or for their human services or for fixing their roads. There's been no investment in the Pennsylvania citizen. They've only taken care of the big boys with tax incentives. It's very disappointing.
And maybe those are the people that he's talking about. Maybe the poverty within their ranks is what they're looking at. Because I got to be honest, you don't have to go far in this city of Harrisburg to find people in poverty. And you don't have to go far in many communities. As we went across this great country of ours during our labor history tour, the People's Tour for America, we found city after city, pockets of poverty, places that have been run down and left. We were in Detroit, neighborhoods completely abandoned. And I look at this and I go, if you want to find poverty, not hard to find, Chairman.
I agree with you totally. And I'm going to tell you, when you have massive poverty, as we are now getting into, it is a direct reflection upon the United States federal government and every state government and every local government.
Thank you.
Because it is not working. These guys, ever since they got in, they have not run one bill that creates jobs or incentivizes people. Whether it's the transportation, which everybody knows we got to fix our bridges. He's had two commissions, the Rendell Commission and his own commission. Easily could have come up with $2 billion, could have floated the bonds, put 50, 60,000 people to work. Those 50, 60,000 people have money. They buy goods, help the economy, and then they pay taxes back to the state. I call it the cycle of growth and prosperity. This is not that difficult. But you know what? They don't want to do it. They know what's there, and they don't want to do it. That's the disheartening thing. I swear to God, some of these guys have no conscience whatsoever. And in the long run, they're destroying the strength of not only Pennsylvania's economy, but our entire United States economy, and they're doing it for their own ideological and political advantage.
I'm with you. You know, I look at this, and you know, I got to be honest. You know, I can be cynical at times, as I'm sure our listeners know. When I saw this Empowering Opportunities Gateway Out of Poverty initiative, though, Eddie, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to say, okay, maybe he had a grand epiphany, maybe a life-changing moment. Who knows? What could they possibly do? I've seen nothing in the last almost 2 weeks now. Nothing whatsoever comes out of his office to say, hey, this is what we found where we're at. So I'm curious, as a member of the policy committee, I'm sure that they talk with you, right?
Let's be clear. The Republicans have really shut the Democrats out of just about everything. I am on the policy committee from the Democratic side. The Republicans have a policy committee as well. But there has not been any kind of coordination, you know, relative to efforts to bring both sides together. The only time they tried to bring us together was when they need two-thirds of the votes, or they need a tough vote, and they need Democrats to give them that vote, like on transportation. That's the only time we've seen from the Republicans for the last 2.5 years.
Wow. You know, and I had thought maybe possibly that this grand epiphany would come with, hey, you know, this is a nonpartisan issue. Poverty affects everybody. It affects our entire community. So we could maybe set politics aside so that if we lift up the bottom, everybody goes with it, and we all do better together. But what you're telling me here is that there's no reaching across the aisle.
No, there's absolutely no reaching across the aisle. Contrary to whatever they may be able to try to get in sound bites, and by the way, they're very skillful with how they phrase things and how they formulate their concepts and ideas, but it's been 2.5 years, Rick. There's still no jobs. All they've worked on was voter ID, which was on a false assumption. They've worked on the women's issues with abortion, which has decimated a lot of serious health concerns. They are working now hard to eliminate the Affordable Care Act, which, you know, if you have insurance and you have enough money, I guess you don't have to worry about your health care. But when you don't have enough money, when you don't have health insurance, you do need some help.
Yep.
And that Affordable Care Act, contrary to what they're saying, look, it is not an end-all, but it was a major first step that had to be taken. And I tell people, if President Obama didn't take that first step, what, do you think your premiums would have gone down? Do you think you'd have gotten more health care?
Nope.
Don't be fools.
Nope.
You know, so it's been a total effort to dismantle rather than to build or rebuild. The people want jobs. The people want to work. Yeah, you might have a couple guys that would prefer to sit home, have a beer, and watch TV. Yeah, but the vast majority of Americans want to rise. They want to have a car. They want to have a better house. They want to live in a better neighborhood. They will work for that. If you give them a decent job, pay them appropriately, they will work.
Absolutely.
America can produce. We've already we've proven that time and time again.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I look at this, and again, I know I've gotten emails from people who say that I'm stuck on this poverty issue because, but I think this is, we're at this moment in time where the divergence of those who have and those who have not is growing wider. And, you know, we really, as John Edwards said, we're becoming very much two Americas, those who have everything they could possibly want, and then the rest of us scrambling for scraps. And I look at this with kind of a jaundiced eye because, you know, I see that the Republicans have done virtually everything they can do to make poverty worse.
You are correct. Now, what an incredible statement to make. And yet, the facts will prove you correct. So, your efforts here, and may I say to any of your listeners that may be middle class and say, well, geez, it's not so bad for me. It's not so bad for you yet.
Exactly.
Until they continue to dismantle more and more and more and more. And then you end up paying for more and more and more and more. And, you know, we haven't even talked about the price gouging, the overcharging of certain things in healthcare, which has put an incredible strain on local municipalities, school districts, states, and the feds. There's a lot of stuff going on that could be fixed that you wouldn't have to raise taxes. You know, a lot of things you could do to invest back into the Pennsylvania citizens and the people of America with if everybody just paid their share.
Well, I look at the big one. For me, if you really wanted, and I've been saying this for the last week and a half, if Republicans are really concerned about poverty, the first thing they should do is take the Medicaid expansion money and get people health care. That's going to help poverty immediately. Raise the minimum wage. That's going to help with poverty immediately. Get people education. Get people job training. And have a safety net that says nobody falls into poverty. To me, simple. Done. We can do that.
I don't disagree with you. I agree with you completely. When you talk about Medicaid expansion, every study has proven 35 to 41,000 jobs over the next couple years. Now, these are life-sustaining jobs, $40,000 to $50,000, $60,000 jobs, a lot of nurses, a lot of educated people having to take care of people in the healthcare system. Do you know 35,000 jobs? You multiply that by $5,000 back to the coffers in taxes. Now you take then the transportation proposal of another 50 or 60,000. Before you know it, Rick, you've got 100,000 new jobs, life-sustaining jobs, paying $5,000 to $6,000 each back to the state. That's worth like $500 million. There's your circle of growth and prosperity. Government incentivizes. Government is the one that's able to produce, you know, the opportunity. The people work, those people get paid, they buy products that helps the economy, they pay their taxes, it comes back to reward the state and reward the feds again. But if you're going to continue, you know, to keep people at such a low wage that they cannot get out of the hole and they have to totally depend on either the good nature and heart and soul of nonprofits or of government, with SNAP programs and other programs to help these people survive, we're never going to get out of the hole.
Yeah,
let's invest.
You're right, Eddie.
Let's invest in the people of PA.
There's far too much generosity in these social programs. One in four people are getting food stamps and food assistance.
Yeah.
And I say you're right. There's something wrong with that. We need
exactly.
to have a raise in the minimum wage so people can buy their own food. We need to
sure.
get people join unions and get collective bargaining agreements so we can grab some of the profits that we create so we can buy our own food. You're absolutely right.
And we should buy American, for God's sake. We have to create our products again. I'd rather pay more for an American-made product made here in the United States of America, made by an American citizen who pays American taxes, than to pay less and have the money go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Come on. We can do this.
I'm right there with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Pennsylvania State Representative Eddie Day Pashinsky, a good friend of the program. What do you think of this weekend? Tomorrow, Chris Christie's coming into our state to address the big powwow in Bedford. Have you ever been to the Omni Springs Resort there? $400 to $670 bucks a night there.
No, I never have, Rick.
Going, wow.
I never had.
I wonder if our governor is going to get the $670 room, and I wonder who's paying that bill.
I have no idea, Rick.
So what do you think is going to come out of the powwow? Because as I'm seeing this, and maybe you've got a different idea, they're going to have the inner circle, the brain trust. Well, the people with the checkbooks, I guess, are going to come in and see if Corbett's viable in the 2014 election. What do you think is going to come out of that?
Well, if they're going in there for those reasons, you know, it's pretty obvious that Governor Corbett is definitely in deep trouble. He did not get any of the major programs that he wanted because his ideas and his proposals were so out of whack that no one could accept them, even his own Republican counterparts. So I think that the governor is definitely in major trouble. Of course, all the statistics demonstrate that, the polls. But when you think about some of his proposals, selling the lottery, which is tried and true, a guaranteed winner for the people of Pennsylvania, selling the liquor stores on a false assumption that you're going to get lower prices and more convenience, listen, all we have to do is modernize them. The people will get lower prices and more convenience. You start analyzing that he hasn't fixed a road. He's been drawing money out of the engineering part of the PennDOT budget just to try to patch, just to try to get through this. He doesn't have the courage to do what has to be done, and that is he's got to float the bonds so that we can have enough money to hire the workers and get these roads fixed and not pass the cost on to our Pennsylvania citizens every time they buy a gallon of gas. His ideas have been bad.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, I'm scratching my head. I can't imagine someone who's going to stand for election on his jobs record, even though he's come out and said that he's the more jobs governor, which I love, because more than Wyoming, so you could make that factually, it is true, he is the more jobs governor, with the caveat of being more than just Wyoming. But, you know, I don't understand why. You know, we used to know every $1 billion of investment in infrastructure creates about 30 to 40,000 jobs. Why, as someone sitting for election, standing for election, whatever, why wouldn't you be pushing heavily for that so that people are back to work, they start feeling good, and they go, hey, that guy that's in there now, we should keep him. He's doing a good job. Instead of what I've been saying, everything is falling apart. Nothing is getting done. Throw the bums out.
Well, remember, he took the no tax pledge, Grover Norquist. And that whole national plan to try to reduce the deficit, reduce spendings, government is no good, government's too big, smaller government. Let me tell you what, that's why your roads and all that stuff is going down. He didn't have the courage enough to float the bonds and pay for it through the methods that we recommended, whether it was closing the Delaware loophole, which was worth over $400 million this year, whether it was the tax, the legitimate extraction tax on Marcellus Shale, whether it was the minerals tax on the shale in Pennsylvania. You're talking about over $1 billion. It takes $67 million to float a $1 billion bond. So for $134 million, he could have floated the two bonds and started the road construction process and hired those people. Then those people, their taxes alone pays for the rest of the stuff.
Yeah, but that would benefit you and me and workers and people here in the Commonwealth. He's against floating bonds for that. But if I'm not mistaken, and I'm sure you know this a lot better than I do, didn't we float a bond for the federal unemployment that bailed out the employers who have been underpaying the unemployment insurance for probably more than a generation now?
Yeah, and we also bailed out the banks. I mean, sometimes that's what you have to do, you know. And now it's a matter of the people don't want a bailout. The people want a job,
yep.
Rick. They don't want a bailout. They want a job. Help us get a job. Make the incentive so that people will hire them for the jobs. And we certainly know that our infrastructure needs it. We certainly know that we could use those 35,000 jobs expanding Medicaid. And then those 500,000 people certainly want to have, you know, some decent chance for health care.
So
there's ways to do it.
Last line of questioning I got for you, Eddie. You know, and I look at this, going back to Chairman Reed's proposal, I'm trying to get people to come along to help, because I want to help him. If he's truly, truly concerned about poverty, I want to be able to help him find folks who need help to find poverty. Will you help me help him? Because I think together we can open his eyes to poverty.
If he truly wants help, I think you'll find all the Democrats will be there. And I, for one, will stand with him If he truly wants to help people, if he truly wants to create jobs, to give people jobs so they can help themselves, I'm with him. If they truly want to sit down and figure out how we can fix roads and how we can fund schools appropriately, I'm with him. But I'll tell you what. The way they've handled themselves for the last 2.5 years, Rick, all you have to do is go into the records and find out how many Democrat bills have been out in committee, or how many Democrat bills have been brought to the floor or passed into law compared to the Republicans. It's outrageously out of whack.
Yeah.
They have about 80%. I think we have 6%.
Wow.
So they are not working bipartisan at all.
Well, what I think this is, and you know, the cynical part of me, and there's a cynical part of me, Eddie, that says this is just more of the same. It's going to be more finger pointing and more name calling because, you know, as the governor said, those unemployed people, they're lazy and they use drugs. And I'm sure that we're going to hear more of, if you're poor, you're lazy and you're stupid. I'm sure that's where this is going, but I'm hoping not.
Well, Rick, I hate to say this, but again, Governor Corbett has been part of that ALEC operation, the American Legislative Exchange Council. That's been part of the whole national plan.
Yeah.
And that is, again, to dismantle regulations so that the big business can make more money, not to create jobs, but to put it in their pocket or to put it in an offshore account. You know, so, I'm afraid until the people wake up and realize that they've been duped, and make some changes in the governor's position, and we got to try to get more Democrats into the Senate and into the House. At least give us a fighting chance. Right now, they outnumber us badly.
Yeah, I've been saying for the longest time, Democrats don't even really have to show up. The Republicans have steamroller power; they can do anything that they want, which is amazing because look how badly this governor's divided them, and fortunately so. Anyway, Eddie, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much, and please keep up the good work. Please get the truth out, and let's try to make a big change this next election.
I'm with you. Our good friend, Pennsylvania State Representative Eddie DePuszynski. Quick break, right back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
It's back. The Patriot Act, a grotesque, ever-mutating, hydra-headed monstrosity from the Bush-Cheney Little Shop of Horrors, has risen again, this time with an added twist of Orwellian intrusiveness from the Obamacans. Since 2006, Team Bush and then Team Obama have allowed the little-known, hugely powerful National Security Agency to run a daily dragnet through your and my phone calls. All on the hush-hush, of course, not informing us spies. Now exposed, leaders of both parties are pointing to the Patriot Act, saying that it makes this wholesale everyday invasion of our privacy perfectly legal. When the story broke, Obama dissembled, calling these massive and routine violations of the Fourth Amendment modest intrusions that are worth us doing to make us more secure. He added disingenuously that Congress is regularly briefed about the program. In fact, only a handful of members are briefed, and they have been flatly lied to by Obama's Director of National Intelligence. Yet, Senator Dianne Feinstein loyally defends spying on Americans, claiming it protects us from terrorists. But then she admitted she really doesn't know how the mountains of data are being used. This is nothing but a bottomless trust us swamp, created by the panicky passage and irresponsible reauthorization of the Patriot Act. Secretly seizing everyone's phone records is, as the ACLU put it, beyond Orwellian. As a New York Times editorial flatly and rightly says, the administration has now lost all credibility on this issue. But no administration can be trusted to restrain itself from abusing the unlimited power of the Patriot Act. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's not enough to fight NSA's outrageously invasive spying on us. The Patriot Act itself is a shameful betrayal of America's ideals, and it must be repealed. To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
I'm concerned about the very heart of America, the 90-95% of Americans who right now are struggling, and I'll continue to take that message across the nation. Because when you attack business and you vilify success, you're going to have less business and less success.
Rick. 1-888-520-7425. Our quote of the day comes from Robert Reich in his piece, Detroit and the Bankruptcy of America's Social Contract. He said the geopolitical divide has become so palpable that the wealthy in America today means not having to come across anyone who isn't. And really, you go back to the frame of John Edwards, and we really are becoming that two Americas. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Bill on line one. How you doing tonight, Bill?
I'm all right, Rick. How are you?
I can't complain. What's on your mind?
Well, it's just good to talk to a man from my hometown, too.
All right.
And we both grew up in the same environment. Mine was at 30th and Cedar.
On the east side of town.
Yes, sir. And that was a long time ago. But I was been a member of the ILGW, the Teamsters, and the AF of M in my day. So, unions, yeah. And I've seen this thing happen. I can't believe this is actually happening. Anybody who grew up hearing the stories of the Depression from the people who raised him, you know?
Yep.
I'm an old guy. You probably heard me work blues group in Cleveland for many years.
Mr. Stress?
Yes, sir.
No way.
Yeah. I've been listening off and on to you for years, and Bob, too, for that matter. So,
I appreciate you giving us a call.
Well, you're hitting it right on the head because, you know, I can't believe it. I went to, in the 60s, I went to a few Birch Society meetings. I could say, who the hell would believe this garbage? What kind of morons were these people?
Well, the sad reality is all the money that they've pumped into this, and every day you're seeing new conservative groups popping up with euphemistic names, pushing that kind of garbage, and it's been you got to give the wealth class in this country credit. They funded it, and they sustained it, and they kept pounding it until now it's almost mainstream to be as insane as they were back then.
Well, you know, I'm reworking Halberstam's book on the 50s, and because I went through, but I was too young to really know what it was, you know. And it's just amazing. I can't believe people are this stupid. What's left of the garment workers union in this country?
I don't even think they exist anymore, do they?
I don't think so.
No, I think they ended up being absorbed by Unite, and then Unite, and here, and the hotel workers came together, and because you've seen these consolidation over the years, because we've seen globalization.
Yeah.
And you've seen these jobs going from cheap, first from the Northeast, then down south, then to Mexico, then to China and Vietnam,
yeah.
And wherever they can get the cheapest labor, that's where they're going to go.
I wonder what they're working for on Mars, Rick. You think that might be next? But you hit it on the head, and I don't know what. I'm on the way out. You know, at age 70, I'm passing out of here soon.
Not soon, I can't. You got time, man.
Well, I mean, the idea of. Were you in the west side by the airport?
I grew up in the housing project right by the airport. In fact, we used to throw rocks at the planes.
And my family looked at that in 48, and we, being east siders, they said, well, we'll stay here. And that was good because I got past a lot of that. You become colorblind early down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the best thing that happened. And the music was something that I took a liking to also. So what the hell, you know. But I don't know, where do you think we can go with this? I mean, you get out and you vote, you talk. I live in a building full of people who are, I'd say, rather up in years. And they just don't seem to get it, because I think the next thing that they're going to hack after, they're going to go after the golden ages pretty soon, too.
They're already doing it. In fact, there's a group right now that the wealth class is funding heavily. Something along Kick the Can Down the Road, or something with the can now, that's literally pitting the millennials against the seniors, saying, you know, and going to go after Social Security again. It's coming. We know it's coming. You look what's going on in Detroit. That's all about stealing pensions. You look at what's going on with Patriot Coal and that whole scenario, to steal back pensions and to deny the next that generation what they earned. It's all coming, Bill. You know it is. It's on the wall, and it's going to take us in the streets, I think.
Well, I did that once during the Vietnam era. I was part of that, and I think I've read more books on Vietnam than most people have, and DMB and Fu. I think I've read 3 on that. And, you know, so I'm pretty hip to what that was about, you know. And in fact, John Foster Dulles wanted Ike to use air power to raise the siege at DMB and Fu.
Yeah.
He wanted us to use, and that was in 54. And 21 years later, my generation, buddies of mine, were going, and some of them not coming back, you know. But I guess it's like the death of the Union. In Detroit, I played a lot of the joint called the Grandy Ballroom up there. Hell, we opened for Cream up there.
Once. Nice.
It was a different world. You know, you were part of the scene yourself.
Yeah, a little bit later, but you know, I remember.
Same thing.
Yeah.
It was music business. You know, it's what it is. And all I know is, how do you educate the young people today to what went on in the 1930s and how we can head back there so quick their heads would spin?
Yeah, you know, it's what we're doing right now. It's we're telling stories. You know, I got to tell you, Bill, when I was a young kid, my mother worked in a nursing home. And I guess this is one of my good fortunes in life, that I had the opportunity to meet folks like you at a very young age, who passed down their wisdom and passed their stories along to me.
Well, my parents and aunts and uncles, they all were in one union or the other, except my one uncle worked for the guys from the Mayfield Murray Hill area for a while. He worked tight with those guys, and I think you
yeah.
The good fellas they
sure,
were.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'll let you go, but hang in there and keep up the good work.
I appreciate it, Bill. Call back anytime.
All right, you take care now.
It's always great to talk to somebody from my hometown. I love that guy. I've actually seen him play a couple of times. But, you know, the thing is, and he's right, you know, how do we, I did. I had some very good fortune as a young child. I got to sit in where my mother worked in the nursing home, and I met a lot of seniors there who, like Bill, you know, said, you know, they're at their end of their time, and they passed along their life stories. And out of those life stories came an understanding that, you know, in this world, unless we're willing to come together and watch you have each other's back, we're all alone. And I still remember a lot of the stories about the Depression, because, you know, that generation, those people who in the early 70s were in the nursing homes, those were people, that was their working lives. You know, that was when they were, you know, they were young men and women trying to make their way in the world. And I look at this, and I think what's happened is they're gone. The people who remember what it was like in the Depression, the people who remember what it was like to stand in bread lines a mile long, the people who were standing in unemployment lines that are a mile long. When we were in Detroit and in Kansas City talking to the auto workers there, I don't think workers today get what it was like back then, where you look out the window and literally there are hundreds of people standing out the window all day long, standing there hoping you'll get fired so that they'll have the opportunity to have a job, even for the shortest amount of time, so that they can put food on their table. This is the world that we've come from. The world of, hey, buddy, you're on your own, and if you don't, you can't eat, you can't afford food, you starve. There were no food stamps. There was no help. And the charities and the churches, come on, nothing. And, you know, I know people say, well, you know, they're good people in the churches. And I agree, there are. People's hearts are in the right place a lot of times. But the need was so great. And I think the need is so great now. When you're looking at the numbers, a A quarter of the children in this country live in poverty? Really? And we've got a party running around saying, we're the party of family values! We love the children! And yet they do everything they can possibly do to make the lives of those children worse, to make poverty worse, which is why, I got to be honest, I've been focused on Chairman Reed's policy initiative. Obsessed, if you will. Because while I want to believe that he's had this grand epiphany and he's going to ferret out the roots of poverty and he's going to solve those problems, I know better. These are the people who have not raised the minimum wage since 2006. These are the people who have not extended the Medicaid expansion to the thousands of people in this commonwealth. These are the people who stood by and let Corbett steal health care from 41,000 people when he eliminated the adult basic plan. These are the people who stood by, did nothing, or actively pursued policies that made poverty worse. And as I've told a number of my friends who say, well, you know, I've never taken any government handout stuff. I don't need it. And then the collapse happened. And they needed that hand. And then they realized, oh, wow, Rick, you were right. I shouldn't wish this away because I might need it myself. I've said 1,000 times on this program, I am not in favor of handout programs, never have been. Jobs plans. Government should be the employer of last resort. I've always said that, and I've always believed it. And it's not my theory. It's not my idea. Randolph, when they said that they were going to come out with a handout program, a welfare program, he was vehemently opposed because he understood that this was going to be used to divide even further. And look what it's done. Look where we're at. Almost without exception, every person I talk to, when you start talking about the economy and you start talking about the social safety net, those people get a handout. I go, who are you talking about? Those people. You know, the CEOs, is that who you're talking about? The big investor class, the people who run multinational corporations, those welfare people? Well, oh, no. That person in front of me using the EBT card, them. Oh, they're the problem. People that without the job that you have could be you? Really? And that's the thing that gets me. And this is where Bill, I try not to use stupid. I like to believe people are just over misinformed. I like to believe that their heads have been filled with all of the wrong rhetoric and we lead such busy lives and we're on the treadmill running and running trying to keep up. That all we're getting is sound bites and little blurbs, and that's what the wealth class and the corporate-controlled media wants. They want people who are barraged with little bits and little pieces without ever delving into the real problems. Look at the shiny thing. Don't actually look behind it. And that's the kind of culture we've become. And I say, you know, it does come back to education, but it comes down to having the time. And that's one of the things that, you know, I go back to my strong belief in unions and my strong belief in collective activity. My strong belief that together we can make this nation great. We can make it better every day. But you got to have time to do that. And what's interesting to me is you look at the right with all these right wing groups, all of the money that the billionaires spend on it, all the messaging that goes, because they never run out, because they don't run out of time or money for the sole reason that they hire all the people that they put out there. Yeah, you look at the American Prosperity Groups, you look at all of the Freedom Works, you look at all of these euphemistically named groups. They've all got well paid staffs. Of professional people that this is their lives. And you know, the sad reality is most of those people, they don't even really care what it is they're peddling. And that's what frustrates me. Now you look on the other side of things. You look to the left. Most of the people are volunteers. They're doing it in their spare time. So what has the right and the wealth class learned? Don't let those people have spare time. Don't let them people get active in their community.
make sure that we allow inflation to go up just enough and wages to go down just enough so that they have to keep working. They stay on that treadmill. They stay on that wheel like hamsters in a cage, which is where we are. And destroy unemployment. Destroy the minimum wage. Destroy any bit of retirement security. Yeah, I watched a video from one of these groups that they claim a bipartisan position, because they're pitting the young against the old. And they said, you know, our debt's $17 trillion, but our liabilities are $220 trillion, $222 trillion. And again, you know, I always love huge eye-popping numbers. Oh, my God, $222 trillion. Cut Social Security right now. Kick all those old people that care. Let them die. That's what they're telling the next generation. And what they've been saying for years to the next generation, to the kids coming up that we've saddled with a massive amount of student loan debt is, you know, you've got all this debt now because you chose to try and be in the middle class and you chose to take out those loans and you invested in yourself and pulled yourself up by your bootstraps. But, you know, you'll see a UFO before you see a Social Security check. And they repeat that again. And again, and again. And if that's what you hear, because it's a really nice little quick soundbite, it's much more difficult to explain, no, actually Social Security is solvent for the next, 2037, I guess it's completely solvent to. And if we do nothing right now at all, nothing changes right now, it will pay 75% of what it's owed for eternity after that. That's if we do nothing right now. What they want you to believe is that 2037, Social Security dies. There's not a dime left. Close up the shop. Lights go out. The paper's all dry. Done. Gone. It's not factual. But it's a lot harder to explain, isn't it? It's easier to say you don't have a better chance of a UFO than you will a Social Security check. That's pretty simple. It's a lot harder to go through the explanation and say, you know, this is reality. When Bush ran around the country with his filing cabinet, I'll use. It was easy to say, oh, it's just all worthless paper. Except it's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. If that paper is worthless, then every dollar and everything in this country is worthless. But, you know, don't let the facts get in your way. But it's, you know, the very well-to-do in this country, they got messaging down, man. And they got the vehicles to do it. And while our program is just one small program in a sea of right-wing insanity, we're here to fight and stand up and bring people together. We want you to come with us. Because we can change this country. We can turn things around. And we will. Going to take a quick break. Back with hour two of the program. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The ugly, grim reality of free trade export factories' brutal exploitation of workers is prompting the Teamsters and other groups to call for the U.S. to suspend TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa.
Vietnam should not be rewarded for its bad behavior, and especially should not be allowed to participate in the TPP. That's why the Teamsters are joining with the Citizens Trade Campaign, the Communication Workers of America, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Unite Here, the Carpenters Union, United Students Against Sweatshops, to call for the suspension of trade discussions until Vietnam ends the abuses and lets people join unions and stop the discrimination.
President Obama is meeting with Vietnamese President Trong Tan Sang today amid ongoing Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Partnership Trade Talks, Scott Nova, Executive Director of the Worker Rights Consortium, says the abuses in Vietnamese export factories serving brands like Nike, Converse, and others include forced labor, child labor, physical beatings, and gender discrimination. Workers can't join unions other than the Communist Party-dominated VGCL.
In 2011, even a representative of the country's official labor union called wages in Vietnam's export factories, quote, shockingly low, unquote. Today, the unfortunate truth remains that made in Vietnam is largely synonymous with sweatshop labor. In our experience at the Worker Rights Consortium, to the extent that the response of global corporations and trading partners to those countries is to reward those countries by putting more business into the country, the countries get exactly the message you would expect them to get, which is that they should keep doing what they're doing.
Polling suggests that supporting an increase in the federal minimum wage seems like a no-brainer bipartisan issue. Jesse Russell reports.
A majority of Americans support increasing the federal minimum wage. According to a new survey by Hart Research, a whopping 80% of respondents say they support bumping the minimum wage all the way up to $10.10 per hour. The support cuts across party lines, income earning levels, and regions. Those with incomes over $100,000 support the increase by 79%, while low-income adults support an increase by 83%. Republicans are least passionate about raising the minimum wage, but only 38% disapprove with an increase. Raising the minimum wage has been one of the central components of President Barack Obama's newest economic plan. He discussed it during a speech yesterday.
The best defense against all of these forces, global competition, economic polarization, is the strength of the community. So we need a new push to rebuild rundown neighborhoods. We need new partnerships with some of the hardest hit towns in America to get them back on their feet. And because no one who works full time in America should have to live in poverty, I am going to keep making the case that we need to raise the minimum wage because it's lower right now than it was when Ronald Reagan took office. It's time for the minimum wage to go up.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Well, I know that somewhere down inside they're just feeling small and scared. And they need to know that someone out there cares. Have you heard of Republicans today? Have you tried to spread your love?
Good idea, Brett.
We got to send our resident hugger over to Daryl Metcalf's office. Big, big bear hug for Daryl. Would his ears just pop off? I mean, here's a guy. I think every time the same-sex marriage issue comes up, I think Daryl loses. Well, I shouldn't say that. Daryl's probably a very nice guy, just insane. But is what it is. And I think this move that the guy who's the Register of Wills in Montgomery County, Bruce Haynes, I think he's done the absolute right thing, but with huge stones. I've got Bruce on the line. Bruce, thanks for taking time for us.
Good evening.
So I guess the first question is do you have carpal tunnel yet? Writer's cramp yet?
I would if everything were not on a computer. My signatures come out printed by, automatically printed by the computer.
Okay. Is it legal, I guess, is the first question.
Is it legal? I believe it is. And I wouldn't do it if I didn't think it was legal.
And where do you see this going? Since Kathleen Kane, she's not gonna pursue on the state level the putting aside of the Defense of Marriage Act, where do you see this going?
I'm not sure. It's really hard for me to speculate. I thought that someone would have attempted to enjoy me by this time. No, nobody has. Now the governor can do it. The attorney general can do it. I believe Risa Furman can do it, and she's chosen not to do it.
So the governor hasn't done anything yet. Well, maybe he's just planning on his big powwow this weekend with Governor Christie and the big money people. And I'm sure Monday, once the big money people give him his marching orders, maybe then he'll make a decision.
It could be. But that's speculation. I've been a lawyer for a long time, and one way to kind of jump on a start a petition run would be always to do it on the late Friday afternoon, because by the time you really got working on the case, you already lost 3 days. You know, so that they maybe somebody might be waiting until tomorrow afternoon to do it.
Well, what do you say to those? And, you know, I've gotten a bunch of emails from people who are saying, well, you know, marriage between one man and a woman, and, you know, you're ruining the sanctity of my marriage, which I always love. How it is that somebody else, what somebody across the street does or somewhere else does is going to somehow harm my marriage kind of just blows my mind. But what do you say to someone who says, you're ruining the sanctity of my marriage?
I mean, I don't understand that at all. I truly don't. I'm not even sure I understand what it means. I think a lot of people talk like that based upon some sort of received notion that they really don't understand. I mean, I don't know what to say. I don't think that anybody's marriage is. I don't think my marriage has been made better because gay people aren't permitted to marry. I don't think my marriage would be worse because gay people are permitted to marry. I don't get the connection. I mean, but hey, what do I know?
Yeah, and in your view, is this an equal protection thing?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I can't see any rational basis for two people not getting married. Certainly not getting a marriage license.
I can see reasons why two rational people wouldn't get married, and I don't care. Sex completely out of it.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's a joke. I've been married for 42 years, and I can think of a lot of reasons why somebody wouldn't get married. You know, but, you know, look, yeah, it to me is equal protection. You got to come up with a reason. What's the rational basis for this distinction? I don't get it. I'm not sure what it is. Well, Pennsylvania, I tell you what, Pennsylvania doesn't let me discriminate. And it's, I didn't write the Constitution. I didn't write Article 1, Section 28. You can't discriminate on the basis of sex. I mean, I don't see how I can do that anymore now that I've, you know, fully worked through my legal opinion. I mean, that's, can I ask somebody their religion and deny it based upon a religion?
Nope.
I don't think so.
Well, and if you did, you'd have someone like Daryl Metcalf, who's just, you know, just losing his mind at this point, you know, really hoping that you may, because I look at this guy, and you know, I've talked to him in the past, carries the Constitution in his pocket, and I've always wondered, you know, the people who tell me that they're strict constitutionalists, why their rights supersede anyone else's, because there is that equal protection part of our Constitution.
Well, I, you know, look, I had a, there were a group of people in my office today. They were very upset about my decision not to uphold the Definition of Marriage Act. That should be decided not by the Register of Wills. That should be decided by a court. Now, I'll bet you anything that if I were to say to them, then if that's the case, then you don't have any problem with Roe versus Wade because that was decided by a court. Mm-hmm. You see, I would be wrong. Okay.
Right.
You know, it depends on, you know, if where you want to go, and that's how you reach the point where you want to go. If I want to go, now in this case, I'm looking at the Constitution, and I'm following its dictates. Okay. I am therefore issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples. On the other hand, people who don't want to me to do that are going to ignore the Constitution. Do you follow me? Even the strict constructionists are going to ignore the Constitution because they don't want me to do it.
Yeah, well, these are the same people who use the Bible selectively. There are portions they like, portions they don't, and they use the parts that they like. So I find the same thing about the Constitution.
Right, exactly.
Parts they like, they use. Parts not so much, they kind of, you know, just gloss over that.
And one other problem with the Constitution, certainly with the U.S. Constitution, is we've had it for such a long period of time, and there'd be these individual decisions about it. So what it says on its face may not be the way we have interpreted over the last say, 150th, particularly like the 14th Amendment. Now, there is no question in my mind, and I don't think there was any scholar nowadays that interprets the 14th Amendment as ever intended to grant rights to corporations. That was not the point of the 14th Amendment. But got interpreted that way in 67, 68, 69, 1867, 1868, 1869.
Right.
And boom, we now have corporations as citizens.
And they marry. They marry all the time.
Absolutely. They do what they want. Yeah, I'm getting off point now. But I'm just talking, you and I are just talking about constitutional interpretation.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, all of this stuff that's being pushed towards us and pushed down our throats by people who claim to love the Constitution. And I find it ironic, since you brought up the corporation part of it, that the people who are against gay marriage and are against abortion, but are very, very much pro-corporate. I find that rather ironic.
Yeah, I do too. I think, I don't know what to say about that. Everybody has a point they want to get to,
right.
And then they interpret the Constitution to get that point.
Yep.
I did it the other way around. I didn't have a point. 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, I didn't have a point at all about this, mainly because I'd never been asked to do it. But I had two women ask me last week, and hey, before I say no, let me find out why I have to say no.
So you didn't have a stake in this one way or another. I had a couple of people ask me, well, is he gay? I go, I don't know. And to be honest, don't care.
No, I'm not gay, but, I mean, I'm not sure what that has to do with it. I mean, like I said, two women asked me what they needed to do to get a same-sex marriage. They didn't do it directly. They had an attorney involved.
And you did your job.
Yeah, well, and well, listen, you think this was a snap decision? Heck no. My solicitor, Mike Clark, and the county solicitor, Ray McGarry, we spent a lot of time going over this. And, you know, what's the law say? What's the Constitution say? What does the Windsor case say? Why is it that Kathleen Kane is not defending DOMA? There's a lot that went into the mix. We come up with, it took us about 3 days to make a decision. I mean, to find out the legal underpinnings for a decision that ought to be made. And that decision was, yes, I will do it. And boom, and there we are. So it's not one of these things that, like, how can I bring this about? No, it's just the opposite.
Someone came to you, asked you to do your job, you did your job, and good for you. I think you made the right decision, and my speculation of the reason Kathleen Kane is not going to pursue a suit against it's a waste of time, energy, and money. We've got other things we should be doing.
That's exactly right. Absolutely right. There are, and that brings me to another point I think is very, very important. I would love to be able to talk to you. What is today? The 25th of July. The 25th of July in 2017, and we will be talking about. What did all of that mean? What a non-event.
Mark that on the calendar, Brett. We're gonna make that happen.
Absolutely. Be more than happy to call you back up or, you know, get your phone call. Because this is anybody who knows anybody under the age of 35, this is such a non-issue. I think our next generations have got this pretty much in hand in terms of equality, equal protection,
Well, I mean, to me, this is the first step in ending this issue.
Exactly.
And I hope that you will go down as the guy who helped take that first step in ending this as an issue and as a wedge issue that, in my view, keeps voters stupid.
Exactly. As you mentioned before, we got other things. We have other fish to fry, not. This is ridiculous.
I'm right there with you. Bruce, it was great talking with you. I appreciate you taking time for us.
Not a problem. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
And thank you for the work you do. Bruce Haynes, Montgomery County Register of Wills. I'm telling you, guy's going to get Corporal Tunnel before you know it. Quick break. Right back. Your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. For working people, on the talk.
You're listening.
high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pscu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal Opportunity Lender.
It's back. The Patriot Act, a grotesque, ever-mutating, hydra-headed monstrosity from the Bush-Cheney Little Shop of Horrors, has risen again, this time with an added twist of Orwellian intrusiveness from the Obamacans. Since 2006, Team Bush and then Team Obama have allowed the little-known, hugely powerful National Security Agency to run a daily dragnet through your and my phone calls. All on the hush-hush, of course, not informing us spyees. Now exposed, leaders of both parties are pointing to the Patriot Act, saying that it makes this wholesale, everyday invasion of our privacy perfectly legal. When the story broke, Obama dissembled, calling these massive and routine violations of the Fourth Amendment modest intrusions that are worth us doing to make us more secure. He added disingenuously that Congress is regularly briefed about the program. In fact, only a handful of members are briefed, and they have been flatly lied to by Obama's Director of National Intelligence. Yet, Senator Dianne Feinstein loyally defends spying on Americans, claiming it protects us from terrorists. But then she admitted she really doesn't know how the mountains of data are being used. This is nothing but a bottomless trust us swamp created by the panicky passage and irresponsible reauthorization of the Patriot Act. Secretly seizing everyone's phone records is, as the ACLU put it, beyond Orwellian. As a New York Times editorial flatly and rightly says, the administration has now lost all credibility on this issue. But no administration can be trusted to restrain itself from abusing the unlimited power of the Patriot Act. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's not enough to fight NSA's outrageously invasive spying on us. The Patriot Act itself is a shameful betrayal of America's ideals, and it must be repealed.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
How can we be a people that fight for America if we don't know who America is or what we're all about? This is, in my opinion, a conscious effort on the part of the left, who has a huge influence on our curriculum, to desensitize America to what American values are, so they're more pliable to the new values that they would like to impose on America.
The values of getting him the hell out of our hair. That's a good start. I was happy to see that thumped resoundingly when he ran for governor, or when it ran for Senate for re-election against Casey, and then booted to the curb in the 2012 presidential election. But I got to be honest, he was always a treat and always a joy. And one of my favorite quotes of his is what marriage is, in his opinion.
Marriage is what marriage is. Marriage existed before there was a government. It's like, you know, handing up this and saying this glass of water is a glass of beer. Well, you can call it a glass of beer, but it's not a glass of beer. It's a glass of water. And water is what water is. Marriage is what marriage is.
Yeah. Good luck on that one. Wow. But, you know, I look at this, and I've always been taken by the people who tell me that they believe in the Constitution. But that equal protection thing, not so much. Especially when they're talking about those people. Always just caught my attention. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast, Stitcher on your smartphone. You can email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com, or give us a call,
520-RICK-1888-520-7425. Our Pennsylvania state legislature wanted payday lending here. In fact, they had tried to sneak it into the budget. It got pulled out by the Senate, and they had to actually come back to work to finish the budget that they had not done properly, which cost you and me a whole boatload of money, because they were supposed to be off on vacation, and we're not paying their travel and their per diems and all of that. Well, they didn't do their job. They came back. We had to pay for it anyway. What I find interesting is that the Church of England, the leader of the Church of England, a guy named Justin Welby, he has decided that he wants to compete with the payday lenders. He's promoting not-for-profit credit unions who will give short-term loans and help out in that way. In fact, you know, the Welby, who is, as Archbishop of Canterbury, the spiritual leader of the world's 85 million Anglicans, he's saying, you know what, we want to put this Wonga, which is the big predatory payday lender in the UK, want to put them out of business. They're from, I guess they're a South African company, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, they're one of the big ones in Britain. They charge, and this just blew my mind when I saw it, because here, when they're talking about payday lending here in Pennsylvania, I've heard rates as high as like 369%. According to the article, customers of Wonga there in the UK who need these short-term loans, they're charged an interest rate that in annual terms equates to almost 6,000%. And they say that the cost of it is, you know, these loans are usually small, about 1,000 euros, maybe 1,500 bucks. And they're short-term, about 6 weeks, and you're looking at it, almost 6,000% interest. And you go, really? It's a $2 billion industry in the UK. And he's saying, look, you know, these are predatory. We're going to promote an alternative, a nonprofit alternative, because they want to expand credit unions. And I look at this, and the government, the British government back in April, said it was going to invest 38 million euros in credit unions to help as an alternative to payday lending. Now, when I read the article at first, I'm going, wow, the head of the church, because the headlines of AFP said Church of England declares war on payday loan firm. And I'm going, wow, great. Maybe the church is actually going to do something good, and they're going to actually help poor people get loans short-term, help them get through the crisis, take the profit motive completely out of it, and put these loan sharks out of business. Because that's what payday lenders basically are. The difference is they don't break your legs. When I was a kid, you had loan sharks. You didn't pay the loan shark came around, smacked you a couple of times, pay up or I'm coming back to break some legs. You didn't pay, they came back and they broke your legs. We've gotten a little more civilized now. We've created a nice little storefront in a probably a rundown mall somewhere in a place with high poverty, where they'll use the power of government to make your life miserable. So you'll never get a tax refund. You won't be, they'll garnish your wages or whatever. And better yet, if you do have a bank account or a checking account, they'll keep cashing the check and churning fees for the bank. So it's a perfect marriage, a corporate marriage, if you will. The loan sharks and the big fish, who both get a bite out of your behind. Isn't that beautiful? It's really just a match made in heaven. To me, it sounds like a ripoff. But, you know, understand what the good folks here in Pennsylvania want. That's the future they want for us. So when I think that's a place where we should probably start. We should reach out to Chairman Reed's office and see if he'll go to a payday lending place somewhere in the Commonwealth and stand outside and talk to the people who need the loans. And I had one of those moments where someone said, well, you're against payday lending. How are those people supposed to get loans? How about just helping them? And if we have to have a loan type thing, why don't we do like the guy at the church there thought of? A non-for-profit kind of thing, if it's really good for the good of society, maybe have a government program that's going to help. Just a thought. Because you never know. It could be you. And to have strict controls on how much they can charge you, how many times they can cash that check and run up fees and all of that stuff, seems to me to be fairly rational. What do you think? Some good news out of McDonald's. The CEO of McDonald's, a guy named Don Thompson, who made $8.75 million last year. In fact, you know, a million hours at $8.75 an hour in 1 year. He said that the company has always been an above minimum wage employer. Told that Wednesday to the people at Bloomberg TV. Now, evidence, again, you know, you got to love the evidence. And I guess it depends on what your view of above minimum wage. The minimum wage is $7.25 on the federal level. Does that mean $7.26 would make you an above minimum wage employer? Okay. There was a study done by Glassdoor who sampled McDonald's employees. And he comes up with an average around $7.75. So that's, I guess, factually, they are above minimum wage, but not much. And I love the website that McDonald's put out with. And I know they care about their employees. It seems kind of condescending and patronizing to me, but you know, it is what it is. Maybe somebody will get some help out of it, even though it is what it is. Even they admitted on a full-time job at McDonald's, you can't raise a family. You can't even support yourself. No money for $20 a week for health care. Good luck on those. Which is why across the country you're seeing a number of groups who are saying, you know what? Going on strike. We're seeing actions in seven cities across the country. And, in fact, next week you're going to see them in Kansas City and in Flint, Michigan. A number of people are going to go out to the streets because it ain't working. And I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting for people to say, you know, enough already. We're struggling to make ends meet. Enough already. We're struggling. Help us. But all I keep seeing is I keep seeing the well-to-do being even that much more taken care of. And this weekend, our governor is going to Bedford, the Omni Bedford Springs Resort, where it costs for one night in a hotel, one night, $400 to $670. Now understand, $400 for one night in this swanky hotel in Bedford, Pennsylvania, which, find it on a map, go ahead, is more than a minimum wage worker makes in an entire, in a week and a half. But, you know, hey, things are just fine the way they are. And what gets me is, why would people spend $670 a night on a hotel? To rub elbows with the governor. Make sure that the special interest and the deep-pocketed, they get that access. So that they got the governor's ear. Hey, I need this tax break. No surprising. Dodd-Frank, how many people have been following this? There's some information that just came out. The Sunlight Foundation reviewed meeting records. And it's no surprise to me that regulators met with 2,118 financial firms from the beginning of Dodd-Frank, which I guess was June of 2010. So from June of 2010 all the way up until the beginning of 2013, they met with financial people 2,118 times. Do you know how many times they met with people who were, like, they call pro-reformers? You know, someone like me, 153 meetings. And you wonder why our laws are so badly skewed and so badly messed up. You wonder why everything's slanted towards the wealthy. When someone like me, or a group that I would say is a reform group, and how we rein in the power of Wall Street, they get 153 meetings, while the financial industry, the people who crashed our economy and caused this mess, they got 2,118 meetings? Or am I just being paranoid? I'll bet you those 2,118 meetings, I bet you those people, I'll bet you they could afford a hotel room for $670 a night. just to get the ear of somebody there, like the 200 brain trust people who are going to be meeting this weekend with our governor in a secluded little powwow. It's got to infuriate you. It's got to make you just nuts. I know it does me. Let's take a quick break. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The ugly, grim reality of free trade export factories' brutal exploitation of workers is prompting the Teamsters and other groups to call for the U.S. to suspend TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa.
Vietnam should not be rewarded for its bad behavior, and especially should not be allowed to participate in the TPP. That's why the Teamsters are joining with the Citizens Trade Campaign, the Communication Workers of America, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Unite Here, the Carpenters Union, United Students Against Sweatshops, to call for the suspension of trade discussions until Vietnam ends the abuses and lets people join unions and stop the discrimination.
President Obama is meeting with Vietnamese President Trong Tan Sang today amid ongoing Trans-Pacific Partnership trade talks. Scott Nova, executive director of the Worker Rights Consortium, says the abuses in Vietnamese export factories serving brands like Nike, Converse, and others include forced labor, child labor, physical beatings, and gender discrimination. Workers can't join unions other than the Communist Party-dominated VGCL.
In 2011, even a representative of the country's official labor union called wages in Vietnam's export factories, quote, shockingly low, unquote. Today, the unfortunate truth remains that made in Vietnam is largely synonymous with sweatshop labor. In our experience at the Worker Rights Consortium, to the extent that the response of global corporations and trading partners to the countries is to reward those countries by putting more business into the country, the countries get exactly the message you would expect them to get, which is that they should doing what they're doing.
Polling suggests that supporting an increase in the federal minimum wage seems like a no-brainer bipartisan issue. Jesse Russell reports.
A majority of Americans support increasing the federal minimum wage. According to a new survey by Hart Research, a whopping 80% of respondents say they support bumping the minimum wage all the way up to $10.10 per hour. The support cuts across party lines, income earning levels, and regions. Those with incomes over $100,000 support the increase by 79%, while low-income adults support an increase by 83%. Republicans are least passionate about raising the minimum wage, but only 38% disapprove with an increase. Raising the minimum wage has been one of the central components of President Barack Obama's newest economic plan. He discussed it during a speech yesterday.
Now, the best defense against all of these forces, global competition, economic polarization, is the strength of the community. So we need a new push to rebuild rundown neighborhoods. We need new partnerships with some of the hardest hit towns in America to get them back on their feet. And because no one who works full time in America should have to live in poverty, I am going to keep making the case that we need to raise the minimum wage because it's lower right now than it was when Ronald Reagan took office. It's time for the minimum wage to go up.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, you're going to stand there and wait an awful lot longer if the Republicans get their will. Evidently, we're phasing out home delivery. You're going to have to start hiking it yourself, brother. You're on your own. Because, you know, taking that mail to your house is too costly. In fact, yesterday in a party line vote, 22-7, the Postal Reform Act of 2013 by Darrell Issa was passed out of committee. And I got to tell you, anything that Issa passes is horrible. This is gold standard for Issa. This is horrible's horrible, which is why we've asked Daryl Vance, Nelk Branch from Branch Local 500 here in the area. Daryl, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Rick.
So the Postal Reform Act, and I got to be honest, anytime a Republican uses the word reform, I substitute that with the right word, destroy.
Yeah, and I like to use the word dismantle.
Dismantle is actually thoughtful and systematic. This is just absolute destruction.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this bill it doesn't really address the true postal crisis, which is in fact the 2006 mandated free fund. As you may or may not know, USPS was mandated in 2006 by Congress to pay for their future health benefits, and they were to pay $5.5 billion, and they were to pay this off a 10-year period. We had found 3 years ago that they were grossly overcharged by anywhere from $55 to $85 billion.
Wow.
So, you know, like right now, currently, the USPS is in default of $11 billion, where, in fact, last year, after operational costs, paying salaries and what have you, they cleared $750 million. So if not for the pre-fund, USPS would have definitely showed a profit. And $750 million is not bad for a nonprofit organization.
Right. And that's important, a nonprofit organization.
That's it. And basically, ICE's bill takes the service out of the Postal Service. Like you said, if enacted, the Postal Reform Act of 2013 would eliminate door-to-door delivery. Most of your towns would have a cluster box set up on the corners, and you basically would have to share the cluster box with your neighbors. One of the biggest downsizes in our state, since Pennsylvania is, in fact, the largest rural state in the country, is people could drive as far as 3 to 5 miles to a cluster box just to get their mail. So basically what that bill is doing is pushing people away from using the service, and, of course, we need them to use the service to stay afloat.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I look at a lot of this stuff, and the whole ending Saturday delivery, the whole ending door-to-door delivery, to me, that's just the poison pill that's going to put an end to the whole thing. And then what happens is, because constitutionally it's mandated that there is a post office, what does that cost us then?
Well, with the current legislation and everything, they still have it. You know, it's in the books. It's law right now that we have to continue delivering 6 days a week. Okay, and which we've done for over 200 years. If it enacted and they eliminate the Saturday delivery, well, right off the bat, 120,000 jobs within the Postal Service would be abolished. So once again, they're always crying about unemployment and people using public assistance, but it seems like there's a lot of parties out there that are doing everything in their power to add to both. And with that being said, also tens of thousands of small and large business owners who rely on Postal Service on Saturday delivery, they wouldn't be able to use the service, and that would affect their business, and then they would have to go elsewhere for other couriers.
Right.
And once again, I just can't. I don't know of any other organization that eliminates services that stays afloat.
No, if you're contracting, you're dying.
Correct.
I mean, that's the bottom line. And they know these are the people who tell us that they know business, and everything that they've put forth in this is what is the death. That's the stake in the heart of any business.
Oh, absolutely. Another thing that really scares me about Darrell Issa's bill is when you start reading into it, because, you know, they're always lengthy, and it takes you about a day and a half to read the whole thing. But when you start reading into his bill, one of the main things that people need to know about is not only does it eliminate Saturday delivery, but there is language in that bill that says after 5 years, the Postmaster General could, in fact, eliminate more days of delivery and more postal services.
Yep.
So with that being said, I want to do a little bit of history and go back. July of 2011, Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe, in fact, went in front of Congress and told him that within the next 15 years, I'm going to have to reduce to 3 days of delivery. Well, Rick, if they go to 3 days, 2 days, none. That's exactly what will happen. And then there'll be right off that 108,000 veterans, which USPS currently employs, they're out of job.
Yeah.
So it's a job killer, and it's also taken away from the American people, because it's not just, you know, our postal service, it's their postal service, it's your postal service. I mean, for 200 years, you've had the right, all you had to do is put up a mailbox, and we would deliver your mail. Now what they're trying to do is they want to introduce the cluster box, like we discussed earlier. But, however, there's also language in that bill that says that if you want your mail delivered to your doorstep like you had in the past 20 years, they'll do so, but you'll have to pay, you know, maybe $15 or $20 a month, just like you pay for your trash. So, people got to understand there's a little bit more. But, then, you know, when they hear about eliminating Saturday, you know, a lot of people think, oh, mailman, you know, what's the big deal? Most people get, you know, work Monday through Friday. Mailman probably needs a day off, too.
Yeah, but those are jobs that people need, man. And they're good family sustaining jobs, which is what infuriates me about this attack on the Postal Service. Because as you pointed out earlier, Daryl, without this poison pill mandate from 2006, from the Bush years, without this Republican imposed mandate, the Postal Service is solvent and in fact profitable.
Correct.
And that's what people aren't hearing. They're hearing, oh, they're in trouble. Why are they in trouble? Why is the post? Because of this poison pill mandate, which I firmly believe was deliberately put into place specifically to bring us to this point, to where we start talking about dismantling and destroying the Postal Service and taking back all of those hard-fought gains by working people, like health care and pensions and a decent wage. I firmly believe that, Daryl.
Oh, yeah, I did, too. And it's just incredible, too, that all of a sudden in this bill, too, there's language in there that basically limits our ability to bargain for pay and benefits.
And job security.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say the layoff clause, the same thing. But, yeah, they just want to strip us of everything that we basically fought for years. So those who fought for us back in 72, 73, you know, we had a couple decades where, you know, that we could, so to speak, relax, you know, go through, because they did the fight. And somewhere, somehow, these people came out of nowhere, and they just started attacking, you know, attacking the Postal Service and the union. And I don't know. I mean, one of my personal things, too, is would they be coming at us so hard if we were non-union and if we weren't that small branch of government? Because like you said earlier on your show tonight, I was listening, there's people out there, they just point blank hate the government, and they just, you know, just hate unions, and they just, you know, they're just got a vendetta.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Daryl, because, you know, we keep hearing, well, it's a government postal service. No government, no federal money, no taxpayer dollars goes into the postal service. It's a separate entity. I mean, it's almost like its own business, but it has congressional oversight. But no money of ours goes, no tax dollar goes into it, right?
Correct. Since 1983 was the last year that any taxpayer dollar went into the Postal Service. So since then, they have been, in fact, self-supportive with the sale of postage and postal services. And they have, you know, only tax dollars that we run off of is what people buy stamps and when they mail packages or use any of our services. But we do not operate off taxpayer money. That's like whenever they start talking about the pre-fund, people start saying, oh, yeah, the post office is looking for a bailout. No, we're not looking for a bailout, because we're just basically saying, you know, we're the only agency, federal or private sector, that was mandated by law to pre-fund our future healthy benefits.
How far in advance? Because this blows my mind. I've heard of people, you know, you talk to actuaries and, you know, they look, what, 30, 40 years into the future. But the Postal Service has to pre-fund the health care and all this stuff. How far into the future?
75 years in advance, and they were to pay it off in a 10-year period.
So you're pre-funding this for 75 years. You're pre-funding the retirement health care of workers probably not even born yet.
Correct.
And doing it in the next 10 years.
Correct. And actually what had happened just, okay, it's 2013. So just, and we haven't paid in 5 years, Rick, because they default, they just couldn't make the payments last year or the year prior. Okay. So within a 5 to 6 year period, they're actually, not only did USPS meet their obligations by making the payments, but then they overpaid. So then there became a surplus that there's such a large surplus out there that there's people that's not born whose kids aren't born yet. There's a pension in there.
You know, what's interesting to me is you think about all this money, and I was going to get to that, how much money that has been taken out of, you know, and my business-friendly friends, think of this for a second. All of this money that they mandated that you pay into 75 years into the future, that's money that isn't being reinvested into today's business.
Correct? Correct.
How is that good for business? Explain to me how it is if you're competing with anyone. How that's a good idea?
It's not. And it's like I said earlier, you know, it's the only outfit that they mandated by law to pre-fund. There's only one other outfit that I found, which was a Mars candy bar. You know, the Mars candy bars. That factory, back in the 90s, there was a financial advisor or a retirement advisor that came in and it offered the company, they said you could either go with a 401k, because, you know, that was kind of new in the 90s, you can do a 401k or else you can pre-fund. Well, Mars sat down, they looked at the numbers, and they did, you know, and they quickly decided, whoa, wait a minute, if we do this pre-fund, we're actually going to pay more into it than what we're going to get out of it, kind of deal. It's not going to work. It's going to cause us issues. So, you know, and that's just across the board. Almost any financial advisor you talk to, they say the same thing, that just, you know, even if it had good intentions, it failed horribly.
And the question then becomes, how much of it was eaten up by the Bush collapse in 2008?
It's hard to say, bro.
Yeah, I mean, that's my other thought. Last line I've got for you. In reading through the piece of legislation and some of the little bullet point highlights of it, I think one of my favorite ones, and I don't know if you've seen this or not, but they want to sell advertisement on the side of the postal trucks, on the little trucks, on the side of the building. They want to rent space inside the post office, you know, for whoever wants to rent space there. And the naming rights have got to come up. So I got to be honest, there's part of me that goes, I'm not so opposed to this, the naming rights part, because they were naming just about every library, or just about every post office in the country after Ronald Reagan. Now maybe we'll get corporate advertising instead of Ronald Reagan's name, which is just about the same.
Yeah, and, you know, with the advertising and all, I mean, that's a little new to me, but the other, you know, we're all, the NALC is very strong with working with USPS to gain any new revenue. So there's no doubt that, you know, in 2013, you know, not eliminating services, but keeping what we have and adding to it. You know, we could do check cashing. We're already selling passports. There's a lot of revenue that could be made out there.
Right.
But this pre-fund just puts such a negative dollar on everything that, you know, I often wonder if the Postmaster General isn't coming up with these decisions to basically make Congress do some postal reform. But what's unfortunate is the reform that they want to do is going to set the Postal Service back even further and further. But there is legislation out there that would correct this, and it's H.R. 630, the Postal Service Protection Act of 2013.
And let me guess, that's stuck in committee.
No, that has not went to the committee yet.
They don't even let it into the committee yet.
Yeah, well, ICE is the chair.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's stuck in committee. The only thing that's probably going to help, he won't let come to the chair. Big surprise there.
Yeah, big surprise there. But, you know, we have, like I said, we have a bill, DePaulia's bill is out there right now that preserves Saturday delivery, makes it law that we have to deliver 6 days a week. It eliminates the pre-fund altogether. It recalculates the pre-fund. And then the next part here is really, really cool. Because what it does is it came up with a method of transferring the $55 billion that was overcharged. It would basically use the overcharge money as credit payments, and we would never touch the U.S. Treasury whatsoever. It would all be basically just ink and paper, and the government could actually use that overcharge as what the Postal Service, you know, the $11 billion that they owe now, and then take the $5.5 billion payment out of that over fund. And it's like the Treasury wouldn't score. That's a great part of 630. And also there's language in there that basically what we really need, it gives a higher criteria for Postmaster General. So in other words, you would have to meet a bunch of qualifications and criterias before you could take the position as Postmaster General. in our current situation, our Postmaster General maybe only a paragraph that he fits criteria-wise.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's crazy. It's crazy how they just constantly, if it's not eliminating Saturday, they want to eliminate door-to-door, they want to eliminate this. It is crazy stuff. And I'm scared because, you know, like I said, there's 108,000 veterans that work for Postal Service. There's tons of veterans that's still coming over from Iraq or out of service in general. You know, the Postal Service used to always be a great job for veterans. And what's sad is, they argue this, but we could use more people. Point blank, we're understaffed. So their offices in Harrisburg, the carriers are clocking in at 8. They're not clocking off till 8:30 at night. Williamsport, PA, they're not clocking off till 10 p.m. at night.
Wow.
So we cannot afford another 20%. Workforce reduction, because the guys clocking off at 10, they're going to be working till 1. So, and what it does for the public is every time, when we're shorthanded and, that's the main thing. As long as we're shorthanded, the mail takes longer and longer to get out there.
And that's the death knell as well. I mean, it's bad policy all around. And I'm hoping that some sanity comes around. It just blows my mind, Daryl.
Oh, it does mine too. Because, I always joke and I say this, but I mean it. If Ben Franklin was around today, I guarantee he's slipping in his grave. Because when he created the Postal Service over 200 years ago, he always made it that his Postal Service was going to strive. Because you got to keep in mind, that, right after the Pony Express came the telegraph. So people started saying, oh, wait a minute, we're not going to need so much mail because they got a telegraph now. They said the same thing with the telephone. And now here we are, they're talking about the Internet. The Postal Service past 200 years and its employees have always strived and succeeded no matter what has hit them. It doesn't matter rain, snow, sleet, hurricane, ISA. We will prevail. We always strive. But if we don't have a Postal Service to work for or the customers to work for also, it just all goes away.
Yeah. Interesting. Daryl, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the input. We're going to keep following this as it goes on. The hope is that when it gets to the floor, it gets shot down. We start back over and get it right the next time.
Yes, that's what I'm hoping so too.
Thanks so much, Daryl Vance. From NALC Local 500, Branch 500. I look at this, and one of the things that caught my attention, and as I brought up with Daryl, that they want to sell advertising on the side of the postal trucks. They want to, sell rental space there inside the post office. And can you imagine, I'm thinking about remember the Chiquita banana car? Do you remember that? The commercials where they'd have the big banana? That could be a postal truck. Or the Oscar Mayer Wiener car? The new postal truck. There are so many possibilities, right? If we just never mind brand recognition of the Postal Service, never mind that. Every penny we can squeeze out of it. We'll do like we've done to the football stadiums. And I don't know if you saw the Cowboys have sold the naming rights to Cowboy Stadium, which I got to be honest, there was part of me that said, I don't like Jerry Jones. But I give him credit for calling it Cowboy Stadium. Well, now not so much. It's going to be AT&T Stadium, the $1.2 billion stadium that Jones built. Said he wants it to be more familiar than the White House. It's going to take effect immediately. It's a 20 to 30-year deal. Details a little sketchy. But according to one of the sports consultants, could be worth as much as $20 million a year. For about 20 or 30 years, somewhere between $400 and $600 million. You may remember the Jets and the Giants. They inked a $400 million 25-year deal with MetLife Insurance. And the 49ers back, I guess it was like April, May, they announced that they've got a 20-year naming right deal with Levi Strauss worth $220 million. Hey, I guess I don't know that. The vast majority of Levi's are not made in the U.S. I know that. I don't know if they make any jeans in the U.S. So I guess for me to say that they make no jeans here in the U.S. would be Probably incorrect. They probably make one specific line so they can still maintain, well, see, we're an American company. But they got $220 million to throw on the name of the new 49ers stadium. Gee, I wonder where that $220 million came from. Huh. Could be the wages that workers used to earn. Just a thought. But there's a lot of this postal thing that just grabs me by the throat and says, man, there's just something wrong with this whole situation. And when you've got people like ISA and you've got people, just look at the bill that they wrote. We're going to end Saturday deliveries. We're going to end home deliveries. We'll just put a box somewhere. Maybe at a Walmart. Maybe we'll sell the right to host the boxes to get you to come in every day to get your mail. And, oh, by the way, put some impulse items there for you to buy. See? Business friendly. All right? And I look at this and I go, you know what the quickest cure to this whole situation is? Not undoing the Bush mandate. Doing away with the health care altogether. Having a national system. This is something that national health care would solve. You know, I look at our time in Fairmont, West Virginia, when we went down for the mine workers rally, and the one guy put it spot on. He goes, you know, if we had national health care, this wouldn't be an issue. Wouldn't be an issue at all. And neither would this. This is just, you know, as I said, this is the poison pill. This is another piece of bad medicine put forth by the GOME. Now, there are some things in here that I think might be potentially not bad, like letting the post office compete on other planes because, you know, they're restricted. I've never been against that. But this idea of, hey, let's see how we can screw those workers and how we can lay them off and how we can take their pensions and make them pay more for their health care just seems to me to be wrong, the absolute wrong direction. What do you think? Because, you know, I go back to the 80s when Reagan wanted to privatize the post office and overwhelmingly 80% of the population said, hell no. It's amazing to me, you know, going back to what Mr. Stress said earlier, how far we've come, how much work the wealth class in this country has done to divide us from our assets. We got a governor who wants to sell off the liquor stores and the lottery, very profitable enterprises that you and I are shareholders in, wants to sell it off for peanuts, campaign contributions. And there are some think it's a good idea. Scary, scary stuff. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com, that's where you go get the podcast. Stitcher on your smartphone, take the program on your go. And as always, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you've got any questions, comments, anything on your mind, something caught your attention, I'd love to hear about it. Quick break, right back.
Can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The ugly, grim reality of free trade export factories' brutal exploitation of workers is prompting the Teamsters and other groups to call for the U.S. to suspend TPP trade talks with Vietnam. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa.
Vietnam should not be rewarded for its bad behavior, and especially should not be allowed to participate in the TPP. That's why the Teamsters are joining with the Citizens Trade Campaign, the Communication Workers of America, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Unite Here, the Carpenters Union, United Students Against Sweatshops, to call offer the suspension of trade discussions until Vietnam ends the abuses and lets people join unions and stop the discrimination.
President Obama is meeting with Vietnamese President Trong Tan Sang today amid ongoing Trans-Pacific Partnership trade talks. Scott Nova, executive director of the Worker Rights Consortium, says the abuses in Vietnamese export factories serving brands like Nike, Converse, and others include forced labor, child labor, physical beatings, and gender discrimination. Workers can't join unions other than the Communist Party-dominated VGCL.
In 2011, even a representative of the country's official labor union called wages in Vietnam's export factories, quote, shockingly low, unquote. Today, the unfortunate truth remains that made in Vietnam is largely synonymous with sweatshop labor. In our experience at the Worker Rights Consortium, to the extent that the response of global corporations and trading partners to those countries is to reward those countries by putting more business into the country, the countries get exactly the message you would expect them to get, which is that they should keep doing what they're doing.
Polling suggests that supporting an increase in the federal minimum wage seems like a no-brainer bipartisan issue. Jesse Russell reports.
A majority of Americans support increasing the federal minimum wage. According to a new survey by Hart Research, a whopping 80% of respondents say they support bumping the minimum wage all the way up to $10.10 per hour. The support cuts across party lines, income earning levels, and regions. Those with incomes over $100,000 support the increase by 79%, while low-income adults support an increase by 83%. Republicans are least passionate about raising the minimum wage, but only 38% disapprove with an increase. Raising the minimum wage has been one of the central components of President Barack Obama's newest economic plan. He discussed it during a speech yesterday.
And the best defense against all of these forces, global competition, economic polarization, is the strength of the community. So we need a new push to rebuild rundown neighborhoods. We need new partnerships with some of the hardest hit towns in America to get them back on their feet. And because no one who works full time in America should have to live in poverty, I am going to keep making the case that we need to raise the minimum wage because it's lower right now than it was when Ronald Reagan took office. It's time for the minimum wage to go up.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I will oppose the Columbia Free Trade Agreement. I want Congress to pass a set of trade deals. Send a message to Congress to come to an agreement on trade deals.
They're selling make-believe and we don't buy that here. Cause in the real world they're shutting Detroit down. While the boss man takes his bonus pay, jets on out of town. D.C.'s bailing out the bankers as a farmer's auction ground. Yeah, while they're living up on Wall Street in that New York City town, here in the real world they're shutting Detroit down.
Oh, is that or running it through bankruptcy so they can screw all the retirees out of their pensions? And, well, I can't wait. I can't wait to see how much the legal cost and all of that's going to be, and how much the very well-to-do get to carry away in the coming months, weeks, and years. Another one of those moments. Deindustrialization. Hey, thanks for the trade policies, guys. Worked so well. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something in your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I've got Dave Johnson on the line. He's a writer and blogger over at the Our Future blog, Campaign for America's Future website, ourfuture.org. Dave, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, it's good to be on again. Been a while.
Yeah, we've missed you here on the program. You're our resident guy to talk about bad trade deals. And I look at what's going on in Detroit, and to me, you know, one of the problems that happened in Detroit is, well, these insane trade agreements.
Well, how obvious is it? I mean, really, how obvious is it? And they're going to blame people who work for the city and took a trade-off, got low pay in exchange for a pension. And so they're saying, oh, God, pensions are the problem. And then they say, hey, we don't have pensions anymore. Nobody else has pensions. Why should they have pensions? Ugh. See, every time I come on your show, though, you get me shouting. You already almost have me shouting.
Okay, well, calm down. Because, you know, at the end of the day, by the end of the show, I'm sure I'm going to have you screaming at the top of your lungs. Because I look at these insane trade deals, and I've been saying for years on this program, I don't so much worry about our budget deficits and our national debt as I do the massive trade deficits that we have month after month after month. And in May, we had another one, $45 billion trade deficit. That's 1 month, Dave.
Yeah, listen to this. The trade deficit is money that leaves our economy. Just gone. It goes away. Our budget deficit, government spending in a democracy, by definition, is things that we, the people, do to make our lives better. Think about that a minute. So when we have a deficit, who do we borrow it from? Largely, we owe it to each other. But the trade deficit is money that goes out of our economy.
Exactly.
It's gone. But more than that, the trade deficit is also jobs that go out of our economy. And what happens is they do these trade deals with countries that are not democracies. And so when you have a democracy, people have a say. And when people have a say they want good wages, good pensions. They want the environment protected. They want good education, good infrastructure. You know, all those things that they call...
Safe workplaces, sure.
All those things they call government spending. And in countries where you don't have a democracy, they are told you can't have good wages and stuff. So when we opened up our borders and just let that stuff in, of course it costs less. But look at the cost. Look at the jobs that have been shipped out. Look at the factories that have closed. That is what those trade deals do. But then what they do is they come to people here and they say, okay, look at how many jobs we shipped out. We're going to ship your job out, too, if you don't shut up and go along. You don't take a wage raise. You take a pay cut. That's what those trade deals did, is they made democracy a competitive disadvantage in the world.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And when you said that the money just goes away, it doesn't. I mean, the thing is with the dollar being the reserve currency, that money has to come back here. And since we're not selling as much as we're not manufacturing and selling back, they're literally buying us.
Well, they can buy us, yeah. But here's the thing about that. They're called trade deals, but you do a deal with China, and we buy stuff from them, but then they don't buy stuff from us. And that money builds up and builds up and builds up. And then they use that money to do this deal they do that drives their currency down so things cost less. Yes, eventually then they accumulate enough, and they come back here and buy companies. They don't buy stuff from us. They buy companies.
Yep.
Then they own the company. Then they get the profits, proceeds, and everything from owning that company. You got it right there.
And the other thing is we've seen numerous times where they've literally dismantled an entire factory piece by piece, crated it up, shipped it back over to China, and recreated the factory that used to be here in Illinois or here in where was the one during the, it was Sensata, the one during the 2012 election.
Yeah, Sensata.
That Romney's Bain Capital had owned.
Yep.
That
yep.
They literally crated up and shipped overseas.
Freeport, something, Port Illinois. We called it Bainport.
Yeah.
But, it was horrible. And it was right during the election. It was how clear of a contrast that could present. But then they make you train the Chinese worker who's going to have your job. And the Chinese aren't very happy about it either, you know. They're not getting the proceeds particularly either. So, yeah, that's what the trade deals do. And Detroit, obviously, you know, you just look at it. How obvious is that? That's where the trade deals took things. Drive around the whole Midwest. Go to Flint. Go to Erie, Pennsylvania, and towns like that, and you'll see it. You know that. You live there.
Yep.
I'm out in California. We have it, by the way. We have it here, too, but we have newer houses and newer buildings that are boarded up. Houses, you know, around Stockton are all boarded up. Buildings here that are for lease, storefronts that are closed, but they're newer, so it doesn't look as bad as Detroit, but we've got it here, too.
No, we just completed our cross-country labor history tour, the People's Store for America, and we went into, you know, communities across this country where, you know, industry just left. I mean, it's not like they couldn't compete. They left. They're somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they say, well, we lost these jobs. They go, nonsense. We didn't lose them. We know exactly where they are.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. And that deal where they then come back and say, okay, so you don't get a raise, and if you complain, then we'll do to your job what we did to those jobs.
Yep.
And then they have this reserve army of unemployed to come take your job if you complain. And everybody knows it. And so that's why we have this inequality that is just, you know, we're a few people. And it happens to, by some coincidence, be the Walmart heirs, for example. Six people, the Walmart heirs. And, oh, yeah, heirs, okay? They didn't work for a living.
Well, they did. They did one day through the birth canal. That was enough.
Yeah.
That was work.
Six people with more wealth than a third of all Americans combined. Just six people. And that comes from that China leveraging trade deal that we're talking about, and that's what happened to Detroit. And as you know, the mother of all trade deals is coming down the pike at us pretty soon.
Yep. The last one, I'm told.
No, there's that one and there's the European one, but it's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And then there's a European one they're starting to negotiate, but the Trans-Pacific Partnership here's how I describe it to people. You know how you used to hear about how cities in a state would start passing anti-smoking ordinances or various ways to crack down on smoking, and so the tobacco industry would go to the state legislature, buy them off, and the state would pass a law prohibiting cities from cracking down on tobacco.
Right.
Same thing with the when cities would start trying to regulate guns, they would go to the state and they would pass something that prohibits the cities from doing it. And sometimes they go to the federal government and they get the federal government to do things that prohibit the states from cracking down on certain industries. Well, now we're seeing a resurgence of democracy where people are getting upset at these corporate predatory scams we all live under, and they see what's coming, that at some point we're going to take back control of our own government, so they're going to a higher authority than the country to override that. It's the same thing, and that's what this Trans-Pacific Partnership is. It's called a trade deal, but only a little part of this deal is trade. The rest of it deals with corporate rights and investor rights. Here's what's going on. This thing is being negotiated in secret. Okay, we're supposed to be a democracy, but even Congress is prohibited. They are not allowed to know what's in this agreement, but there are over 600 corporate representatives at the table.
Yeah, and when we heard Alan Grayson, when we were at Netroots Nation out in San Jose, California, he said that, you know, he's seen it, but he can't tell you what's in it. And I'm
That's
like,
right.
What, are they going to kill you if you tell us?
And here's the thing. There are no human rights organizations represented there. There's no labor organizations. I think there's a little bit of that, but they're not allowed to talk about it, and they're certainly not contributing to it. There's no consumer organizations as part of this. There's no environmental organizations. So it's rigged from the start. It's a rigged process from the start. I mean, you've got they're developing a treaty that's going to tell us the laws we have to live under, and it's just corporate people. No Congress isn't in it. The human rights, no environmental, etc. Well, guess what's going to come out of a process like that? Of course, it's going to be a corporate rights treaty. Now, this is serious stuff. Here's an example. There's a company in Italy suing Egypt's government because after they had that revolution, the Arab Spring revolution in Egypt, they raised the minimum wage. Well, the company's suing the Egyptian government for raising the minimum wage. That's going to a world court that is over the Egyptian government. That's what these trade treaties can bring in, where we are not allowed to pass our own laws anymore. There's already one example is we tried to have a law saying that tuna has to be labeled if it's dolphin safe, and some giant Mexican fishing companies that export tuna to us sued because if people see that label, they might not want to buy the Mexican tuna that's not dolphin safe. They're suing us for passing a law that says that we want to know if this tuna is dolphin safe. They're suing us. That is what these treaties, and that's not trade. See, that is the company is saying, hey, this government, who do they think they are? These people in this state are saying, or in this country, they're saying that they don't want to get tuna, you know, and that's going to hurt our profits. So they're suing us. So that's the danger of this treaty. But here's another thing about this treaty. It's called a docking treaty. As you said, this is the last treaty. Well, after they get this treaty written down, and so the giant companies chop up their slices of the pie they want and block out any new competitors and stuff, then any country that agrees to abide by the treaty can join the treaty.
Yep.
And you get this corporate pressure in these countries. You know, they go to these countries, they get this corporate pressure, they buy off people in the government, and so the country joins eventually. And then they have problems of like they're not addressing currency manipulation. So Japan's now joining the Trans-Pacific Treaty. Japan manipulates their currency. What are we going to do about it? Well, we don't know. It's secret. But you can be sure that the corporations that want to export jobs and buy stuff cheap from Japan, they don't care about it. They don't care about currency manipulation, and those are the ones negotiating this. I'm filibustering. I'm sorry. I'm talking too much.
No, I mean you're right. I mean you're on. You're this is the right message. I mean at the end of it, what's frustrating to me is it's all being done in secret, and the trade agreements that we were a part of that we got to see, they were horrible. So how bad is this one?
Well, here's an example. We just got this Korean trade agreement. KORUS, the Korea-US free trade agreement, something. Remember, it was sold to us about, oh, God, the car companies are going to do so well and this and that, and we're going to all have millions of jobs because we're opening up trade. Well, here's what happened. They signed it last year, and we've already lost 40,000 jobs, already, because of this huge flood of imports from Korea is enabled now, and we're our exports are not keeping up with it. So the other thing that's happening, aside from losing 40,000 jobs, is that the trade deficit has soared by, I think, $3 billion or something already. And now, we just signed this last year. So there's an example. No country that we have one of these agreements with are we running a trade positive trade balance.
And that's the message in all of this. So what can we do to stop it? I mean, you know, it looks like it's all but done, and it's going to be fast tracked through. What can we do?
That's the thing. The thing that's coming next on this is they're trying to get something called fast track trade authority through Congress.
Right.
All right. Now, that is where we can fight this. Fast track trade authority is Congress saying we give up our constitutional duty to look at this and discuss it and amend it as we feel we need to, as a democracy should do. They give up their constitutional obligation to amend it and do all of those things because they say, you know, if we have Congress look these things over, we never get them passed. That's what they say. In other words, democracy gets in the way. Fast track. Listen to that or learn that word. And when you talk to your member of Congress, say you do not want them to support fast track. It gives up American sovereignty.
Yep.
It gives up congressional rights. And then the next thing that happens, the reason we've got to fight that is that the other thing that happens is that means the president can sign the treaty before Congress sees it. Then he comes to them with a signed treaty and says, all right, you're going to undermine my credibility if you don't pass this that I've already signed, or if you try to meddle with it or this or that. And they only have, I think it's 90 days, it's something like that under fast track authority. They have to do something. So then you get one of these massive corporate PR campaigns, applying pressure, paying off the right people and all of that. This huge bump. Rush. Remember how we...
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Inflation, well, you get people who need help. And the majority of people who get food stamps and who get government help work. I know that's kind of hard to believe, but it's reality. What we've allowed to happen in this country, and it's sad, we've allowed a situation to be set up where you've got these big multi-state, multinational corporations like McDonald's and Walmart and Darden restaurants, you know, the Olive Gardens and the Red Lobsters and the Capital Grills and all of them, to set up their business model on using cheap labor. So the cheaper the better, because, hey, you know, we could just tell them, you know, when you need health care, you need heating assistance or any of that stuff, just go to the government. Those programs are there. Now, granted, those programs are there to help people who are in need, not people who are working. But, hey, this is a twofer. We get cheap wages, and we get to point our finger at the government and say, it's their fault. When the reality is it's our fault. And Dave Johnson brought up an interesting point there a second ago about the Recovery Act. I said from the very beginning that it's way too small. It should have been double. And as he points out, it initially was double. It was $1.6 trillion, a good shock to the economy to get people to stop the free fall. What we ended up was, what, $880 million or $880 billion, and it stopped the free fall, but the recovery, not quite there. And now you go, you know, a couple years, 2 years down the road, hey, we need Sequester, hey. Now we cut. Going to cause another downturn. And I look at this and I go, explain to me how that's good for the Republicans, how it's good for them to keep office. And I have to go back to state legislatures across the country have gerrymandered states so badly that it doesn't matter what they do. The elections are rigged before they even start, and they've got us focused on voter suppression laws. Oh, he doesn't have an ID. Well, what the hell does he need an ID for when the districts are so badly gerrymandered that it doesn't matter? And I look at the latest data put out by the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO, who comes out and says, look, you know, thanks to the voter suppression law, remember GOP Chairman Rob Gleason, the guy here in the state of Pennsylvania who said, I got the clip around here somewhere, said that, well, here's what he said.
We cut Obama by 5%, which was big. You know, a lot of people lost sight of that. He won. He beat McCain by 10%, and he beat Romney by 5%. I think that probably photo ID had a helped a bit in that.
Had a big part of it is what he meant to say. And as their analysis points out, some 36,600 people thought the law was in place and stayed home. Because I remember on voting day, the buses going by would bring your ID. Amazing. Just amazing. And we pay these people. That's what infuriates me. A quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. 2561.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
So a group of young activist immigrants showed up at Representative Stephen King's Capitol Hill office today. They just wanted to bring him a little present, a couple of cantaloupes, to protest his recent statement that immigrant children they're about 100 pounds, 120 pounds, with calves the size of cantaloupes. And why is that? Because they're drug mules. And to make it worse, took to the House of the floor today, Congress, and basically compared himself to Jesus. So very, very nice. Very nice guy. Anyway, let's go to D.C. Let's talk to our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, what do you think? Is Stephen King Jesus?
No, but I think he has a little frontal lobe damage maybe.
Well, he is getting up in
years.
When you
get older, and he is a few years older than me, which puts him nearing 65.
I didn't think you were that old.
Well, I'm 62, and he's a few years on me, so, right?
Yeah, okay.
So if you're that age and you have any kind of early brain disease, could be that his judgment is getting slightly impaired. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I haven't looked at his brain, but I got to tell you, it's worrisome.
Somebody should.
Right.
I mean, because I look at this, and it's one thing to, and I guess the first rule of a lot of these crises is when you dig a hole and you find yourself digging, stop. He should just stop. But he's got a history of doing this, where he goes on these nonsensical diatribes to defend stupid things that he said.
Well, yes, and it's shocking that they let him go to the floor and didn't say, "Hey, you're going to lose your seat if you do this." He almost lost his seat, the former governor's wife, last time.
Yeah. And you got to wonder. You got to wonder what the people in that state are thinking, man.
Yeah. Well, they're probably thinking we should have elected the governor's wife.
Or the other side of it, because I've got a friend who just absolutely adores him, and that Louis Gohmert is the other one that he just, is great, great American.
Well, you know something? Steve King has always been somebody you could kind of talk to, joke with, whatever.
Yeah.
But, oh my gosh. And this is really beyond.
Sad. Sad, sad. And you know, what we need is we need Obamacare to help get him some mental health treatment. Which would, if he heard me say that, would probably
sound be good.
Completely off the deep end.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, what can you do? Let's move along. Evidently, Nancy Pelosi weighed in on the Anthony Weiner thing. You know, I talk about mental illness. I got to be honest. I'm looking at this Weiner thing, and I'm going, it's time to, you know, get a little help or stay the hell out of the spotlight, one or the other?
Well, yes. And the question is, well, these people don't stay out of the spotlight, and they don't know they need help. And as Nancy Pelosi said today, that she thinks they should basically do therapy on their own time and not make it public.
Yeah. And for me, I got to be honest, I really don't care what he does in private. I don't care what messages he sends to who. That's none of my concern. But when you start throwing it out into the street and it starts becoming, to me, I look at his wife and I'm going, you know, I feel for her.
And not only that, I mean, she must love him. But on the other hand, look, Clinton actually had some kind of sexual encounter with Monica Lewinsky. This is just sending pictures. You know, you have to, if you want to rationalize it, if you're his wife, you can say, hey, he sent pictures.
Okay. I don't know that my wife would buy it, but okay. I think I would find my stuff in garbage bags on the front lawn if she was nice enough to at least put it in garbage bags. And as I've always said, she'd take half my stuff, and it wouldn't be the good half either.
No. What would she take?
She would take all the good stuff and leave me with the crap that's left.
I understand. Was it a dining room table she'd take? What would she take?
Well, whatever. Well, half. You know, everything. You know, all of my. I'm sure she would want everything that I like. Like
just to spite you.
Just
right.
To spite me.
Cause, right.
Because women are like that. Or these things. In my view, they are. Let's move on. The president had another speech today in Jacksonville, Florida. What's that, the third in 24 hours?
Yes. And he is, because he made one yesterday at a school that is an innovative school that helps people, you know, it's what we would call in the olden days a tech school. Now it's an innovation school. And then today he was in Florida.
Yeah. And what did we talk about today? Again,
we talked about a port. And basically he said you're not going to get any business putting themselves by a port that's not a modern port. Why would a business that's involved in that kind of thing do it? Obviously, if you have a business that's unrelated, it doesn't matter where you are. But these are port-related kinds of businesses, and they're not going to go without a modern port. And he signed an executive order to get rid of a lot of the red tape that is involved in government right now
okay.
on this.
Well, that should make the Republicans happy. I mean, the anti-regulation, anti-red tape people, they should be thrilled with that. Jumping up and down in the aisles, right?
Right.
Are they?
No.
I mean, I look at this, and again, you want to talk pro-business? You know, to me, investing in infrastructure is extraordinarily pro-business, because if you can't get your stuff out of the country, or in this case, you can't get all the cheap plastic crap from China into the country, that's not real good for business.
No, it would not, and that's the problem. You know, you've got China that doesn't ask anybody. They don't have to go through red tape. They can just decide they're going to build a new port, and they do.
But
they build ports in other countries for other countries.
Yeah. Well, can we then tell them to build one here since we won't?
It might be a good idea.
Because I look at this and I go, you know, other countries, they do this as a matter of course, and we used to. We used to at least be functional enough to say, you know what, putting people to work, you know, building roads and bridges and ports and airports and all kind of stuff was kind of bipartisan because both parties seemed to like voters who were happy and had jobs and all of that. It just seems like now, nothing.
Right. Yes. The question is, why are we putting this off? What are the Republicans gaining? I can't figure that out.
Dysfunctional government. Look, you know, the people who keep telling us that government's broken and it doesn't work and vote for me and I'll make it worse, well, they have. And this is what happens when you have people who don't believe in what they're doing and say, I'm going to keep them in check and we'll hold them at bay. This is what you get. I mean, I was talking to, we did an anti-violence march yesterday here in Harrisburg. One of the judges held an anti-violence march, actually a wellness walk for the community. And I was talking to the judges, we're walking, and he said, you know, back in the 70s, he was on the school board, and they were talking about replacing the sewer systems and the water lines in the city of Harrisburg, because they're pushing, you know, 90 years old then. In the last year here in Harrisburg, there have been 42 sinkholes, because the infrastructure that they didn't fix back in the 70s is now collapsing under our feet. And he said, back then we knew it was a problem, but we couldn't get anything done. And this is where we've been for the last 30, 40 years, and it's frustrating as hell.
Right. Well, it is frustrating as hell. And what is frustrating is that any time there's a plan that the administration puts forth, no matter what it is for, they fight it.
Because we don't want him having any ideas. And like the immigration thing. Someone told me today that the Republicans are going to start calling the immigration bill Obamagration.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's the new one. That's the new.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they got Obamacare and Obamagration.
Well, what was it under Bush?
I don't remember. Immigration?
Right. They didn't want to deal with it because it was from their party.
Yeah, it was, you know, as I remember the Bush plan, which is the part I was opposed to, is any of the guest workers, because they're going to have a guest worker program, that they wanted to chip. They wanted to put little RFID chips in their arms so we could track them, so we know where they are, and we could get rid of them at any time. And I'm going, I don't know that I'm all that thrilled with that. Because when you start doing it to them, how long is it going to be before it starts happening to me?
Exactly.
You know, when my oldest daughter was born, she's 11 now, we had done the cord blood. The first person in the hospital ever to store the cord blood.
Really?
Cord into the
wow,
doctor.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we for all three of our kids, we stored the cord blood, because who knows what 20 or 30 years is going to hold and what they do with stem cells. But evidently, the call went out that, hey, here's somebody who's, you know, wants to do crazy stuff. A guy actually approached me and said that we could chip her. They have this little rice-sized thing that they would shoot in the fat of her upper arm, and you could chip her.
What does that mean?
Well, the V-chip. Don't you remember Tommy Thompson?
Oh, yes, of course.
Tommy Thompson was out there
right.
Pimping the V-chip. I don't think he ever got V-chipped himself like he said he was going to. But this guy wanted me to chip my infant, my newborn baby. I'm going, are you insane? Well, don't you want to find her if she's abducted? I go, yeah, we just won't lose her, but... What happens if she doesn't get abducted? Who can track her then? Well, exactly. Get out of here. But you know, it's this mentality that, oh wow, we could find them if they're ever abducted. Well, you know, the chances of being abducted are so slim But the chances of having every kid chipped and someone tracking them, that scares the hell out of me, especially when you look at all this NSA stuff and all the Homeland Security stuff. Scares me. It scares the hell out of me. In fact, what's interesting is yesterday we talked about a story. One of the local news directors from TV stations just got popped for prostitution.
No.
Yeah, he was a 60-year-old guy, you know, young girl. I don't judge. Do what you got to do. But the local police department worked in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security's Human Trafficking Division. What exactly is the Department of Homeland Security doing in a little podunk town here in central Pennsylvania, popping people for prostitution?
Good question.
I mean, I think it's just got...
And why? Who cares?
Exactly.
I don't like prostitution. I think it is abusive to women, et cetera. However, don't we have bigger things to worry about right now?
You would think. But, you know, here they were, the Department of Homeland Security, the Human Trafficking Division. And look, I'm against human trafficking. I think there should be an agency working on that. But I don't know how... an old guy and two middle-aged white women, and a white guy, how that has anything to do with human trafficking or any of that. I guess I'm confused.
Listen, I am as confused as you are. And I have to tell you, I really wish you'd come down and you know, do your show a couple of days from Washington, particularly in September, when the budget turns into again on October 1st. And they do this continuing resolution. Do you know that after Labor Day, because of the Jewish holidays and Labor Day, they have 7 days of legislative session?
Wow.
Till October 1st.
Wow. Well, I would love to come down for that. You find us a place, and we'd be happy to be there.
Okay.
I love getting out of the studio, and I love going and talking to people where they are. And the trip we just completed, the People's Tour for America, we drove all 9,600 miles across this massive, beautiful nation. It was fantastic. And I already miss doing it.
I wish I could have gone with you.
It was fantastic. We had an absolute blow. Back to the news, though. Evidently, the president meeting with the president of Vietnam.
Yes, they met, and apparently the president was very direct about human rights, and so we'll see if anything happened. Of course, we didn't get the exact discussion about all of this.
Yeah, and I'm sure that this has everything to do with the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement that they're trying to sneak through. Because I sat 20 feet from the then candidate Obama, who said, "Trust me." No free trade agreements without strong environmental and labor protections. And then he goes and he passes three of them that I'm not quite sure.
Did he really say that?
Yep. We got the video of it. I was 20 feet from him.
Oh, I'd love to see that if you could send it to us.
I'd be more than happy to. But, you know, I'm 20 feet from the guy. And, you know, Columbia? Are you kidding me? Where they throw union leaders out of airplanes and pull union members off of buses and shoot them in the head? Really? That's news to me. Is what it is. Anything
That's amazing. I never knew he said that.
Yeah, I most certainly will send it to you. Also, are we giving some military aid to Egypt?
Well, yes, but we've pulled back our F-16s, and the issue is whether it was a military coup, because if that's the case, it's against our law to give military aid to them. Interesting group of people. Dennis Ross, not exactly a conservative, but was definitely somebody that was involved in a lot of this. Is on the side of continuing military aid, as is McCain. So it's going to happen, but it looks like we're taking them out for a little punishment run first.
Yeah, well, maybe. I said from the beginning we probably should have stayed out of that entire thing. And speaking of the Department of Homeland Security, Republicans walked out on the Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security?
Well, it was the nomination for the Assistant Secretary, I think the Acting Assistant Secretary. In any case, yes, because they said that the Assistant Secretary helped arrange a visa for a company that Anthony Tony Rodham, Hillary Clinton's brother, was involved in, and that they were pressured to do this. And the nomination for Assistant Secretary, and don't ask me to say his name because it's a foreign name and I can't pronounce it correctly. I think it's Greek. And I don't want to ruin it on the air. But anyhow, he said that he did not give any compensation,
right,
dispensation, whatever it's called for these people. But if that's the case, why didn't they just question him about it? Why did they walk out?
Well, they had to make the statement.
Right.
And cause a scene.
I guess so.
Yeah. That's sad, sad stuff. Alan, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our good friend Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
There isn't anyone immune from globalization. In fact, the confluence of greed and geography blends seamlessly over all of humanity. As the American workforce has become more sophisticated and smart, corporations have become less agreeable. Of course, there were numerous road signs that led to globalization, and at this point, somewhat improbable that any single cause could be raised from the economic wreckage it has created. However, 1976 may have been a high watermark for the American economy, where a change in the tax code emboldened corporations to move more operations overseas. Where these gutless entrepreneurs once shuttered factories in the Northeast and moved them to southern localities, they were now served up by the U.S. Congress, a world plate, for even to their insatiable greed, the possibilities seemed limitless. The assault on American workers continued in the 1980s when the Reagan administration further retooled the tax code to allow foreign investors to set up American subsidiaries, thereby artfully managing the exodus of U.S.-based corporations. The unseemly alliance between Congress and corporations offers little solace to workers, but does shine a perpetual light on the misgivings of unregulated money flowing into the pockets of greedy politicians. Unions, while greatly weakened over the last two decades, continue to mount credible defenses, proposing balance, equity, and fairness for workers over the broader brush of Congress that would have us believe that globalization can regulate itself. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Minute is brought to you by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, go to www.therickSmithShow.com.
He is now turning me into an unofficial Southerner, and I'm learning to say y'all, and I like grits, and the things are strange, things are happening to me.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So tomorrow, the big powwow in Bedford, $670 a night hotel rooms, as Chris Christie comes to town to give the keynote speech at the big powwow to decide whether or not to decide whether Corbett's going to be the guy. And if you don't know, what's going to happen this weekend is about 200 of the inner circle, the brain trust, well, the paychecks, the big campaign checks, the people with the checkbooks, the money, the deep pockets, special interest. They're going to go to Bedford, Pennsylvania, central location. Money from all around the state could come in and dictate to the governor what his agenda is if he decides to run again. Or if they're going to support him. Because you may remember back in February, Republican Chairman Rob Gleason said that the governor was going to raise somewhere around $40 million for his reelection campaign. What I find interesting is over the last couple of weeks, that number has been shifted downward to $25 to $35 million. And there's some grumblings, because back in February, there were some people floating the names of Lieutenant Governor Jim Cawley as the heir apparent, he could be the guy, step in, he's anti-worker as anybody. They threw out Jim Gerlach's name, the congressman from Chester County, as, hey, here's possibly, even went so far, the business community needs their guy, went and threw out the name of Rob Wunderling, former state senator, and the current Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce president. And that was back in February. Threw those names out there. And those names are still kind of floating around. But you've added a couple more. Congressman Pat Meehan, Congressman Mike Kelly, and, of course, State Senator and the majority leader, Dominic Pileggi, their names have all been thrown out there as, well, you know, let's see where the base, let's see where the money, let's see where the money and interests are gonna gravitate to. I think, and I'll be honest with you, I think Corbett's gonna be the guy. I don't think they can abandon him. I think that would really send a very interesting message to the party loyalists. But I also think that the moneyed people, they know this guy's very, really damaged. His polling numbers are pathetic. Now they're trying to say, well, you know, his polling numbers aren't that bad. You know, they're right in line with where Rendell was, and they're not. And the other thing is Tom Corbett is not Ed Rendell. Rendell was a master politician. I didn't agree with a lot of his policies, but he was a very good campaigner. Corbett, not so much. If the Democrats find somebody who actually is a good candidate and not Dan Honorato, I think Corbett goes down. And I think the moneyed interests know that. So it'll be interesting on Monday to find out where what happens with the big powwow, the big meeting of the minds, well, the meeting of the checkbooks anyway. So I'm interested to see how that's going to go. I think you may see the Medicaid expansion. I think you may see some push towards easing some of the real horrible stuff that he did the last couple of years to say, oh, well, you know, now we're moving. It'll be interesting on Monday. Anyway, tomorrow night we're going to be taking the night off. I'm going to replay a program from earlier in the week. Since we've gotten back from the tour, some household problems need to be rectified. And I've just got so much work to catch up on. We hope that we'll be back on Monday as we're back in the studio doing the work that we need to be doing. Have a great night. We'll see you back.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming, time to flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy.